is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run.
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White.
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Boy, cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And good afternoon. Here we go, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Happy to have you along for the ride the next 3 hours. The next 3 hours are going to be kind of like the Steve Tasker Show presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Steve Tasker Show. But it's fun, though. It's fun to watch Steve work at his best.
Yeah.
He and Jay Harris.
Yeah, Steve Tasker, if you don't know, he's been there all week. He is out at Super Bowl 52. He's got a great lineup of guests coming up today, including Jim Kelly, our buddy Greg Cosell from NFL Matchup. He's got Takeo Spike scheduled to join him, Lorenzo Alexander scheduled to join him, maybe a couple of other special guests. Steve will join us momentarily from the Super Bowl. Now, how are you and Lorenzo going to go at it if he's in Minneapolis and you're here? How's that going to work?
We can't go at it today. You know, I don't know if we have crosstalk going on, but I think we just have to let Steve go
carry
at it
the
with
torch.
Lorenzo. Yeah, he's going to carry the torch. I don't know if Lorenzo probably looks up to Steve, you know, so he probably won't go at it with Steve like he goes at it with me.
Okay, we're going to miss that element of the show. Yeah. But I that's not phony, right? There is genuine dislike between you two.
There is. There is. At least for about the 3 minutes while we're going at it, and then, you know, we get
then
back
it's all
to
good.
Yeah, then we're all good.
On the show today, a lot of Super Bowl talk with Steve's reports from Minneapolis. We also want to talk a little bit about the catch rule. This came out yesterday. Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, in his news conference, his annual news conference at the Super Bowl, he had this quote. He said, "I would like to start back instead of adding to the rule, subtracting to the rule." He's talking about the catch rule. Start over again and look at the rule fundamentally from the start. That's our Twitter poll. That's where we're going to start discussion today. And we'll get Steve in on this as well. If you were going to start from scratch, start over again on defining what is a catch in the NFL, where would you begin? What would you do to start from scratch when it comes to defining a catch? Our Twitter poll is up. I'd like to hear from you on this topic. If you were going to start over, start the catch rule from over again, where would you start? Right now, three-quarters of you, 76%, say possession and 2 feet down. Pretty simple. 11% say no replay on catches. I'd start there. 11% have something else in mind. 2% say more replay on catches. I don't know about that.
So the possession with 2 feet down, does that mean people want to change that?
They want to limit. I'm interpreting that, and if you have a different interpretation, please phone in.
Right.
I'm interpreting that as people saying, that's it. No matter where you are in the field, no matter what the situation is, have possession 2 feet down. So I think replay is the issue, Donald.
I
think replay is the issue when it comes to catches and very many other things when it comes to NFL officiating. But if you want to start there saying all you need is to have possession and get 2 feet down, I'm good with that. Eliminate the parts about, you know, surviving the ground and completing the process of the catch and making a football move and all the different verbiage we've had over the last 10 years or so to try to define a catch. When I was a little kid, when you were a little kid, not that long ago, possession and 2 feet down was basically it, right? And there were never the kind of, you know, ongoing debate and angst and people, you know, rubbing their hands together trying to figure out, is that a catch, is that a catch? No. Did you have possession? Did you get 2 feet down in bounds? I'd start there.
I mean, did they have cameras when you were a kid?
Yeah, they had cameras. They had instant replay. It wasn't used to officiate. And it shouldn't be, I don't think, because now we're just creating issues, I believe.
I go back to what I've been saying. And for me, it's the replay as well. In terms of going to the ground, all of that stuff. And I kind of put together the whole possession with 2 feet down plus eliminating the replay because I feel like you just leave it in the hands of the official.
Yeah.
Real time. Does the official think you caught it or not? The official is standing right there. If he feels like you caught that ball, then it's a catch. But if you have to go to replay and watch it over seven different angles and all of that stuff, well, now you're just adding too much to the game and you're taking away catches. As a receiver, I know I just caught that ball. I know it. And I'm talking about just going to the ground. I know I got 2 feet in and I just caught that ball. But it's slightly moved an inch, and so you're going to take that away from me? Come on, man. You know how hard it is to not let the ball move at all when you hit the ground? I can see if the ball actually moves a lot and the ref can see it. But as a player, I know when I caught it. And as the official, I'm standing here watching you. You just caught that ball. I didn't see it move at all. So that's a catch. So I feel like you leave it in the hands of the official, take it out of the hands of New York and the replay system and all of the technology that they have going on, and just let the people on the field make the calls and make the plays.
Where do you start reversing, you know, fixing the catch rule? That's what we want to hear from you today on the telephone line. We'll get to your calls. The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter, vote in our Twitter poll, or just weigh in via Twitter. Where do you start with revising the catch rule? That's the topic of the day. The news of the day comes from Minneapolis, the site of Super Bowl 52. We are fortunate enough to have our own very own Bills Wall of Famer, and from the NFL on CBS, Steve Tasker, longtime Bills special teamer, who's covering the Super Bowl with us for us this week. And he joins us now live from Radio Row at the Mall of America, Bloomington, Minnesota. Steve, you look good. The Super Bowl's not wearing you down at all.
Yeah, thanks, Murph. I appreciate that. But I'll tell you, this play that Minneapolis is now explained, I told you it was going to happen, and certainly it did. There's like four times the people here today. The place is absolutely buzzing, and everybody I've ever known who ever played football is showing up at Radio Row today, including boy Jim Kelly's going to stop by and all the other guys. So it's definitely a very busy time. You can tell now that there's a Super Bowl in Minneapolis, no question.
Yeah, we're going to put you to work today and take us through your guests. You mentioned Jim Kelly's going to join you. Greg Cosell from ESPN NFL Matchup, right? You're going to talk with him.
That's right. Greg Cosell, Jim Kelly, Takiyo Spikes coming by, Lorenzo Alexander, you guys were talking about. Maybe Kevin Harlan will stop by later in the show. If we can't get Kevin on today, maybe we'll get him on tomorrow as well. So we're going to be busy today. We've got some people lined up.
Great lineup. Steve Tasker going to be with us a lot today on the show from Minneapolis. Well, where do we start? Let's start with the Super Bowl itself, Steve. It is Thursday. Teams are now deep into the practice week preparations. You know, they go through their media sessions. They go to practice. Any news coming out of the Super Bowl yet? Any updates on, say, injuries, Rob Gronkowski or otherwise?
No, not so much. Gronkowski's starting to emerge out of his hole of concussion protocol, but like we said, even the guys who were limited in practice, and some guys were full go in practice after coming off injuries, I think you can count on both these teams being 100% healthy for the game, despite what you might hear coming out of practices and despite what has happened in the past couple of weeks with guys dealing with injuries. I don't think there's any question. I know from my own experience, I was talking to guys, if you can stand up on your own two feet and get on the field, you want to play in this game, and they're going to do that. So even if a guy's not 100%, you can bet it's not going to be an issue whether he plays or not.
Yeah, I was thinking about I saw where, I guess this morning, Bill Belichick mentioned that Gronkowski was still in concussion protocol. And, of course, everything that Belichick says, you start to, you know, analyze, and what does he really mean? I don't know if there's any competitive advantage for him saying that Gronkowski still remains in concussion protocol.
Listen, here's the thing. Murph, Gronkowski's going to get cleared from concussion protocol 2 minutes after the Patriots finish their last media obligation.
Why is that, though? What's the advantage?
To keep Gronk off Radio Row, I guess. I don't know. So that Gronk doesn't have to do all the media stuff. Once you're in, if you're in concussion protocol, you're excused from all media stuff. So Gronk, if you can work it that way, if it was my case, what are you going to do? Think of that. Then this is what I mean. I'm exaggerating to make a point. Say the Patriots win by 25. And on the last kneel down, Tom Brady gets bumped in the head and has to go through concussion protocol. So he's excused from all the post-game media because he's in concussion protocol. He can just leave. Don't think about that. So I mean, it's a huge obligation. And to keep Gronk in the concussion protocol for as long as they can before he can be cleared to play in the game, I think it's just a favor to Gronk that he doesn't have to do all of that. He can kick back and relax for the entire week and not have to do all of the stuff that all the other players are obligated to do. I don't know that, but if I was a player, I'd certainly lobby the doctors to make sure that happened.
I mean, that's interesting because, as we talked about yesterday, Gronk was in a Madden event playing LeGarrette Blount in this Madden event where he actually did some interviews.
I know, right?
So I don't know. But
right?
Steve, you played in these Super Bowls. So once you get to Thursday and you're talking about everybody's coming into town now, all week you've been saying the teams are kind of off by themselves. They're not caught up in the hustle and bustle of the Super Bowl as much as everybody else is. Once you get to Thursday, it's your normal routine of we're installing these plays today. Once you get to Friday, it's the normal routine, right? I mean, is it something different on these days?
No. It's way different because you put the game plan in last week, and now you're just detail work. Today is when the lid comes off. And like I said, the families come in today. The staff comes in today. All the ancillary personnel who didn't need to be here for the football end of it come in today. And, you know, these teams, it's an unbelievable event, and it's an organizational accomplishment to get to these games. So you can bet the Patriots and, of course, the Eagles the Patriots are here every year, but the Eagles, they bring everybody in, all the family, all the staff, and they all get here today. And for a football team, you know what it's like, Donald, you get to the game, you get to the place where you're going to play the game, and you get there one day and you play the next. So when everybody arrives on Thursday, it feels like that Saturday before the game. So you wake up tomorrow thinking, okay, I'm ready to play a game. And you still have 72 hours before you get to play the game. So now is when it starts to get tedious and really frustrating for the players that the game isn't going to happen. They got to deal with all their staff, all their family, all their friends coming in for the game. They got the final ticket stuff going on. They've got all this stuff going on that all of a sudden they start like getting into the final stretch of the game, Thursday before the game. And now the game seems to get moved down the road 3 days. And it starts to become very frustrating for these players when they're finally ready. The game plan's been in place for 10 days instead of just 3 days or 2 days for a regular season game. And the game still doesn't happen. And this is when the frustration sets in. So, yeah, they're ready. Thursday, they'll be there. Today will probably be their final really hard practice. Tomorrow will be a little bit of it'll be more of a practice, but not like today. And then, they just have to wait. And then they have to deal. Everybody wants to touch base with all the players. The 15 tickets that you got for the Super Bowl, everybody who got one of those 15 tickets wants to touch base with you and say, hey, thanks, it was great, it was awesome. So you got all those conversations you got to do. And, your day just starts to get filled with all this stuff that has nothing to do, and it starts to be hard to focus on the reason you're here, and that's the game.
Steve, when you were going to those Super Bowls four straight, you would bring, what, family, friends, babysitters, right? You'd bring you would, right? Wouldn't you? Some guys brought babysitters.
My pediatrician made the trip.
Because reason?
We had three kids. Yeah. My wife, you forget, Super Bowl 25 in Tampa Bay, my son Luke was born 3 days before the championship game, and there was only 1 week between. So he was less than a week old, and he was on the charter flight coming down with the family and friends. So I talked to Bill Poley and Mom, and they said, yeah, you're right. So they said they brought my pediatrician on the trip, who subsequently went to all four Super Bowls with the team as the team pediatrician, because everybody brings their kids, and he saw six kids on game day. He had to see six other kids besides my on game day because they had sniffles and stuff, hotels, So it's all of that going on while you're trying to play a game.
Crazy.
And it's off the hook. I mean, it's off the hook.
Yeah.
And then after Super Bowl 25, we had to – Super Bowl 25 set a precedent for Bill Poling and our crew. We were at that hotel in Tampa, and the hotel was a beehive. It was a madhouse. It was like a frat party. Kegger at our team hotel the night before the game. So from then on, from the years subsequent, we went to a hideaway hotel to get away from all that the night before the game. So yeah, it's crazy right now for these guys, and it all starts today.
Steve Tasker joins us from Super Bowl 52. You brought up Luke, your son Luke Tasker, who's been extremely successful in Canada in the Canadian Football League, coming out of Cornell a couple of years ago, and the word came out overnight Luke has had a tryout with the NFL New York Jets, yeah. Steve. Congratulations, and tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, he flew out of Buffalo yesterday. In fact, because of the structure and the relationship between the CFL and the NFL, the Jets had been talking to him for quite a few weeks, and because of the timing and the interface between the CFL and NFL, they needed to work him out before midnight last night if they were going to do it because of the free agent period for the CFL. And so he got a call. Was today Thursday, so we got a call Tuesday night and said, listen, we want him to come in tomorrow. So he was on a 610 flight out of Buffalo over to New York yesterday and spent the entire day at the Jets facility. Did a very short but intense workout for the Jets, and then spent about 3 or 4 hours with their doctors. Every doctor they had, the internist, the orthopedic, all of that stuff, and was home last night after the workout. And he called me and Said he said he was happy enough with the way he worked out. But he's a different kind of workout than what the Jets or the NFL guys are doing now. It was a different kind of workout because my son Luke has been out of college for 5 years. He's been playing professional football in Canada. So it's not like they didn't know who he was.
Right.
So it was a different kind of workout than they would give a college kid coming out where, you know, 40 time, bench press, all of that stuff. This was more about a getting to know kind of thing and saying hello to Luke in that regard. And also checking him out. 5 years in pro football, he got about 25 or 30 x-rays yesterday. Right. I don't know if that's an exaggeration. But, yeah, that was a big part of it.
Steve, have you talked to him about coming back to the NFL? I mean, the game is totally different, especially playing wide receiver in the NFL versus the CFL. You don't get the whole running start and all of that stuff. Have you talked to him about that?
Right. No, not about the rule changes. That stuff kind of takes – I don't think that's a big deal. It wasn't a big deal, actually, when he went up there to get the running start and have the waggle kind of move where all five receivers are in motion before the snap in the CFL. That was kind of that was easy to pick up, so I think it'll be easier going the other direction as well. But talk to him a little bit about it. He just said goodbye to the NFL interest that he had, the first contract he signed or the second contract he signed that just expired in the CFL. He declined some NFL interest even then. So I think at this point in his life, he knows he's just about turned 27. This is kind of the prime of his career, and if he wants to make a go of it, this might be the time for him to do it in the NFL. So he's at least keeping that door open. But for my kid, he's had a great experience in the CFL. I at one point, I would have been surprised if he would have thought about leaving. But my thought is he'll probably see where it leads.
Steve, how does it work up there with the contracts and coming back to the NFL? Does he have to be totally out of his contract totally done, or is there any type of wiggle room when you're still under contract with the CFL team?
No. If you've got a contract in the CFL, you're in contract with the CFL. You can't come back to the NFL unless you get released by that club. That's been tested a couple of times, and the league, the CFL wins those. If you're under contract, you can't play football for anybody else, even in another league. And that's an agreement between the NFL and the CFL as well. So when you sign a 3-year deal, you're not going to come down to the NFL unless your contract expires.
If he does make the team, the Jets, you know, it's a rivalry there. So how do you approach that? As his father, do you go to the game with the half and half type of jersey on? How does that work?
Well, I don't know that he would. I don't know that the Jets would supplant the Buffalo Bills as my favorite team. I'm pretty sure that wouldn't happen. But I know I'd have a new favorite player in the NFL.
Right.
So I would. I'd be cheering for him. You know. So that's where I would sit on that. I mean, believe me, I would. The Jets would go from. You know, the Jets would. Believe me, even now, hey, the Jets gave him an opportunity. I know that he appreciates it, and so do I. I think it's a great idea, a great opportunity for him, and I appreciate their interest in him.
We wish him luck. Luke Tasker getting that tryout with the Jets last night. Steve Tasker live with us from Super Bowl 52. You've been there all week, Steve, and this is a game on Sunday that has plenty of connections between the Buffalo Bills, including with the Philadelphia Eagles. I just shot out a text to our mutual friend Tom Donahoe, who's part of the Eagles scouting staff these days. But there's a number of others. Corey Graham, the Buffalo native. Nigel Bradham, Jim Schwartz, their defensive coordinator. And you got a chance to talk to Ronald Darby, who just played here last season.
Yeah, I sat down with him and talked about his adjustment coming to Philadelphia, what it was like stepping into that defense, and then also about the year that the Buffalo Bills, his old team, had as well. We had a chance to sit down with him, and this is that interview right now.
Ron, talk a little bit about this. Been a little bit of a roller coaster for you. You came over late in training camp, got traded to the Eagles. How long did it take before you started feeling like it was normal to be in the Eagles locker room rather than the one you got drafted by?
I mean, probably once the preseason was over, we was getting into the regular season. And, you know, I got hurt week one, so it kind of, like, set me back again. But, while I was hurt, you know, I grew closer to the team, you know, got the scheme down a lot more, you know, learned a lot of stuff while I was down.
Talk a little bit about the atmosphere. You won the NFC Championship. at home. Talk about that locker room, what that meant on the sidelines when you pulled that off.
I mean, it meant a lot. You know, it's new to me, so it was a great experience just being in front of that crowd and hearing how loud it was and just, like, the energy and just being blessed enough to make it here. You know, I hear it's very hard to make it here to the Super Bowl. It's my third year, and, like, I'm just enjoying every moment of it.
Talk a little bit about what you guys have been doing in Philly then this week leading up to this. What you did in practice, how's it feeling, and the vibe coming out of the team?
We didn't really do that much. We didn't do nothing different. It's like a normal week for us, you know. We're going to prepare the same way. You know, if it ain't broke, you know, why fix it? So,
talk a little about, you watch those guys on film, Tom Brady's still doing it at a high level. He's 40 years old, all of that. Talk about their strengths, their weaknesses on offense.
I mean, they're a good team. They consistent. You know, they got a great quarterback. You know, he know how to pick people out, you know, what he want. And, you know, that's something I had to go up against twice a year, like, you know, the past 2 years. So it's gonna be a challenge, but I feel like I team up for it.
Did anybody from the old Bills team reach out to you after you got to the Super Bowl and holler at you?
Yeah, I talked to Tre'Davious a lot. He did a great job this year, too, by the way. I talked to Shaq. Those are the main two people I really talked to.
You reached out to them when they made the playoffs. That was a big deal back then.
I was happy for them. Like, I knew they had the team because, you know, I was there. So I knew, like, when I was there, we had the team to do it. So, I mean, like, I seen it coming. I wasn't surprised at all.
What do you expect now this week? I mean, what have they told you about what to expect about all this, like this tonight, opening night, media night, and then, you know, you still got a long way to go before the game. What's been the message from your coach, Peterson, about what to expect this week?
You know, it's just going to be a lot of, not calling this an outside distraction, but, like, just learn how to, like, use your time in a good way, like, in a good way. So when we have free time, you know, try to stay off your feet and, you know, study as much as you can. Just keep your mindset right for the most part.
About this first and then later.
Congratulations on the Super Bowl. Good luck, man.
Thank you.
Murph, that was it's interesting. You talk about the trade with Ron Darby, who went over to Philadelphia, and then the Bills make the trade for E.J. Gaines. So after all those trades, the Bills' secondary got better this year after the trading one of their better players in Ron Darby with the performance of Tre'Davious White and the two safeties, Poyer and Micah Hyde. Who'd have thought that was a bumpy road and a winding trail to get to a better secondary?
Yeah, I think right, and we've talked about this. Darby gets traded away. Before that, Stephon Gilmore leaves via free agency.
Exactly.
Bills signed a couple of really good safeties. One of them made the Pro Bowl. They get E.J. Gaines, who and I think a lot of it has to do with fit. You know, the people they had this year, 2017, just were a better fit in the kind of defense that Sean McDermott wanted to play.
I think we sometimes get caught up in just talent. And you watch so much talent leave out the door, and you're like, man, you can't ship all of that talent out the door in the same year and still think that you're going to win some games. And that's why you had the tank talk and all of that stuff. But when you think about it, you had Aaron Williams, who was done. You had Stephon Gilmore, who left. You had Ronald Darby, who was traded away. And so you're looking at it. And then Corey Graham, who was done, he moved on. And so you're looking at it like, what are we supposed to do now? And then they bring in four new guys, and nobody knew what you would get. And you traded back to get Tre'Davious White. You bring in E.J. Gaines, who a lot of people here didn't even know who E.J. Gaines was. Ultimately, it was all about the fit. That's what it came down to.
Yeah, and there's obviously, you know.
Yeah, and I think.
Go ahead, Steve.
I think one of the things that you realize about that is not about bringing talent in or acquiring talent, and it's about what Sean McDermott said. They built a team, and it was a better team than it had been for 17 years before, a more productive team. Although the team had, the Bills had acquired a 9-7 record a couple of times during that time, it was never good enough. And this is a team that came together, and really, by virtue of the changes they made and the vibe and the culture they built, carried a 9-7 team into the playoffs. And I think that's one of the most, when you look at this Super Bowl and what the Patriots have been able to do, they don't acquire talent. They build a team.
Yeah.
That's what Sean McDermott has done in Buffalo, and I think it was a great testament to the intelligence of that, in that it got them to the playoffs in their very first year of doing it, and I think it gave them a great validation of what their philosophy was.
Yeah, the Patriots have built a pretty good team over the years, and they've done it with some pieces from the Buffalo Bills, Steve, right? There are connections with the Eagles, obviously,
right,
but some other connections between the Bills and the AFC champion Patriots in this
right.
game.
Yeah, and one of the things that you talk about, some of the Bills going over there 2 years ago, Chris Hogan showed up in New England as a little free agent. They hired him away from the Buffalo Bills, and a lot of people were really happy for him, signed a nice contract, but now he's going to his in back-to-back Super Bowls. And we caught up with him the other night and asked him about the couple of weeks and what it could mean leading up to the Super Bowl with a two-week gap going into their second straight Super Bowl and how experienced they are at this kind of thing. So here's the interview with Chris Hogan.
Chris, one of the things about this game is a lot of times there's a two-week gap. A lot of times the teams install their game plan week one so you can deal with all of this stuff in the second week. Is that still the way it's done? Did you guys kind of spend a good hard week in New England before you came down here getting some real nuts and bolts work done?
Yeah, this past week was a great week for us to really focus on, you know, our game plan and, you know, how we're going to go about playing this game and just, you know, really just kind of take that time that we have at home, you know, without all the other stuff going on, you know, here at the Super Bowl, you know, to really focus on our game plan, our preparation, our film study and all that kind of stuff without any of the distractions.
What do you have to watch out talk about the Philly defense. I mean, they're a pretty salty bunch.
They're a great defense. I mean, watching them on film, they make a lot of plays. They create a lot of turnovers. They play really fast. So that's something that, you know, that we're just, you know, really going to have to focus on ball security, running good routes on the outside, you know, creating good separation, you know, whether it's going to be a contested catch, you know, being physical, and, you know, obviously just taking care of the football will be.
One thing I got to ask you, Tom never seems to be in the center of a bad performance. You never see the guy stumble. You never see him have one of those games. What is the secret to being so consistent for so long for him?
I think it's his preparation. I mean, the guy has been playing this game for a really long time, and you know, you wouldn't be able to tell just because of how he prepares every single week. No matter what week it is, or you know, whether it's in training camp or whatever it is. I mean, he prepares like no other person I've ever seen, and you know, he's ready for any and all situation that comes about in football games.
Thanks, Chris.
That was our interview with Chris Hogan, former Buffalo Bill. Now it is back in the second straight Super Bowl after leaving One Bills Drive. And guys, I don't know what you make of that, but Chris Hogan is the perfect example of a guy who is, when the Patriots pick him up, it's not like they're acquiring talent, but they're starting to build a team. And he is, at certain times, maybe a handful of times over the past 2 years, his number's been called, and he's been the guy who's had the big 120-yard game with a touchdown or two touchdowns, and that's the way the Patriots operate, and he's a perfect example of it.
He's a good player. Is he worth the money? That was the debate, you know, here when he got away. But, yeah, the Patriots find a role for those guys to play.
Yeah, he wasn't worth that money, but he is to the Patriots, and he fits into their salary structure, and he has a role that he fills every week. It's not like he was inactive or he goes some places where so some weeks without being on the football field. When he's healthy, he's on the field for them. And I think in that regard, there's no question. That was not his role here in Buffalo. And I think you got to tip your hat to the Patriots for finding a guy that they can exploit like that.
Steve Murph wanted to ask you this, but was he standing on some sort of a riser or something like that? Or is he just that much taller?
He's not that much taller than you, Steve, is he?
I didn't remember him being that tall. I was shocked by that, and a little bit discouraged. So
he's grown into his role in New England.
I saw that too. I saw the height thing too, and I was like, "Golly, I got to reach this." I had to bribe the bottom of the mic so I could reach his mouth. But I hear you anyway. But listen, that's just one of the interviews. We got Greg Cosell's coming up with us down here. We've got Takiyo Spikes coming in, Lorenzo Alexander, and also Jim Kelly's going to stop by as well, so I know you guys are looking forward to that. And so we got a lot more going on here today.
Yeah, we're looking forward to all of it. Thank you, Steve. We're going to get back to Steve Tasker in a moment. He's covering Super Bowl 52 for us in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Greg Cosell coming up in a moment. Want to talk with you as well, and we want to talk about Roger Goodell, who said yesterday that it's time to start over on the catch rule. That's our Twitter poll. So where do you start when you start over on the catch rule. On Twitter, three-quarters of you, 75%, say possession and 2 feet down. Sounds simple. 12% say no replay on catches. 10% say something else. 1% say more replay. We need more replay. What do you think? 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 if you'd like to weigh in. Tom from West Seneca wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, John, Don, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. In answer to the Twitter poll, 2 feet down, of course, but I don't think it should have to be simultaneously, together, and, of course, possession. But actually, on replay, if they want to start somewhere, they should start in the replay booth and make sure that the guys that called the no catch for Benjamin, they should all go for an eye exam, because I think most of America and you guys and the announcers all agree that Benjamin caught that ball. And now from there, I want to tell you that I'm picking Philly with my heart. I like them. And also, Cheap Shot Gronkowski had a concussion. Now, there's different severities of concussions. There's mild, then there's severe. And my question to you guys, if you can answer, is, of course, we've seen a couple of mistakes this year where they sent guys out when they shouldn't have. I won't mention any names, not the Bills. But as far as the concussion protocol, what I was curious about is they keep them out for a week or so. As far as Cheap Shot Gronkowski goes, is that like who has the final say on a concussion? His personal physician, and if the personal physician, his doctor, gives approval, then there's no liability to the NFL. And that's pretty much it, okay, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Tom. I believe they use the what they call the independent neurological observer, independent of the team, who will have the final say, cleared from concussion protocol. I think that's how it goes.
Yeah.
2 weeks removed from his shot to the head, I don't think there's much doubt that Gronkowski will be cleared any day now and be ready to play.
He said he expects to play on Sunday.
Yeah, so I wouldn't worry about that. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to head back to Minneapolis where our guy, Greg Cosell, who normally breaks down matchups for us on Fridays, is going to sit down with Steve Tasker out in the Super Bowl city. Greg Cosell from ESPN NFL Matchup, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. He'll dive into this matchup, the Eagles and the Patriots, with Steve Tasker from Minnesota when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back live at our One Buffalo studio on this Thursday afternoon. It's Super Bowl Thursday, the game coming up on Sunday. The last caller, Tom in West Seneca, already gave his prediction. We'll do that tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And I want an in-depth prediction from you, if you would, tomorrow, please.
Okay, how in-depth are we going?
Well, we should do it like the way the Instigators do a recap from the future. Like, what a great game last night in the Super Bowl. Do you believe that Chris Hogan made 8 catches for 170 yards?
All right, let's do it.
We'll do the recap from the future Super Bowl version tomorrow on the show.
Perfect.
All right, because we do have to talk about the game. You and I have to talk about the game. Mm-hmm. We'll do that tomorrow. We're talking a lot about the catch rule. The commissioner says it's time to start from scratch. We want to know from you what you think that entails. Where would you start when you start to define a catch? But it is Super Bowl week. We do have Steve Tasker out there in the Super Bowl city, Minneapolis, and he gets a chance to talk to some of the great guests we do on a regular basis throughout the regular season. Some of my favorite segments were with Greg Cosell on Fridays with basically his breakdown of matchups. He's a master at that.
He is a master at the matchups. He watches countless hours of film, more film than I don't even know if coaches watch that much film. And he's smart, man. He really gives you inside, in-depth look at the game, different things that you should look out for, something that you might not think of. We always talk about Brady and the most obvious stuff, and that's what most fans look at, but he'll give you some little snippets of some things that, man, I didn't think about that at all. So it's good to talk to him.
And Steve Tasker gets a chance to talk to him today at the Super Bowl. Let's send it back to Minnesota, where Steve Tasker is sitting down with ESPN's from the ESPN NFL matchup, Greg Cosell.
Thanks, Murph. We're here in Minneapolis once again, sitting here with NFL Films, I guess, film study expert, Greg Cosell. You're one of the few guys I can actually ask X and O questions, because I know at least you're doing some stuff. Everybody else is here for whatever. It's good to see you. Thanks for coming on. I'm not promoting anything.
I'm just talking football.
Thanks for coming on with
us. I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about the game a little bit. For this may be my first time to talk about the game all week, but talk about the Bills fans in Western New York.
Right.
They see Tom Brady twice a year. One of the things they noticed this year is the tempo of the team. Once in a while, they'll pull out this tempo game and step it up a little bit, and it causes some confusion. But first of all, let's talk about Tom. What are we going to see in Tom Brady this year that maybe we didn't see last year in other Super Bowls? What's different about this edition?
Well, I think this edition of the Patriots offense has been a little more intermediate and vertical based in the passing game. They throw the ball down the field more than we're used to seeing them. But I think you made a great point. You obviously know about the tempo offense from your days as a player, but I think you're really going to see that in this game, Steve, because I think the strength of the Eagles' defense is their D-line rotation. They play seven or eight guys, and they like to rotate that throughout the game. It keeps everybody fresh. They really don't want anybody having to play 65 or 70 snaps a game.
Right.
And that selective use of no-huddle tempo, I think, is absolutely going to be critical for the Patriots.
I've said that as well, because you look at the two games that the Giants beat the Patriots in, and the game, you remember the juggernaut of an offense that Peyton Manning came in against the Seahawks. They were stymied by four guys pressure right now, getting quick pressure with just four guys. So the seven other guys could be in coverage, take away those quick passing lanes, and that was a crusher. And I think that's what the Giants were able to do with Michael Strahan and Jean-Pierre Paul and all those guys that could get quick pressure in these games against Brady. And you're right, the rotation of Philly's defensive line keeps them fresh against that offensive line. And I think that's the key to the game.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that. I just got a chance to talk to Steve Spagnuolo, who's a good friend of mine. He's making the rounds here on Radio Row. And I asked him what he thought about it. And he said, you'll absolutely see that. He said, look, when we played them, we went to a lot of quick passing game. We wanted to get the ball out. We wanted to negate their pass rush. You know, I think you'll see that from the Patriots as well. And to me, I don't know how you feel, Steve, but I think Brady's the most patient quarterback in the NFL. If you give him six-yard throws, he's going to take six-yard throws.
Yeah.
And he'll make you play. And, you know, the Eagles play a lot of cover three, and their corners play with a cushion. You know, their corners rarely press. They play 8-9 yards off the ball. And I think if you give him those 5-6 yard throws, he'll take those 5-6 yard throws, and then he'll make you come up, and then they'll go with some of those double moves.
Right. Yeah, talk a little bit also, and I agree with you, he's as patient as Father Time. Oh. Obviously, he's 40 years old, and he looks like he's 25. Talk a little bit about the Eagles' defense. Now, it's a talented group. Their defensive line is kind of the key, but they're also their back end is pretty solid, because they do what they do best.
Yes.
And they don't really conform to what you try and make them do. They're good enough to do what they do and force you to play against them.
Yeah, predictable's not the right word, but they're not that – they're not that elaborate in what they do. They're a single high base defense. So the cover three version of that is zone, obviously. Cover one is man. They're predominantly cover three. They have two really good safeties. I mean, you could argue that Malcolm Jenkins is as versatile a safety in what he's asked to do and does it well as any safety in the league. Mm-hmm. So, and Rodney McLeod is a really good single high player. Every once in a while they get him involved as a blitzer. Jim selectively blitzes. He's not a high percentage blitzer.
Right.
But I'll tell you one thing they do, and I'll be real anxious to see if they do in this game. It's very situational, is they do a lot of zero blitz.
Right.
You know, almost more than a lot of because, you know, teams are very leery of going
zero
blitz.
Explain what zero blitz is.
Well, that means that there's no safety in the middle of the field.
They got no deep help.
There's no deep help at all.
You better cover them.
Right.
Or, you know,
right.
You
it's
got,
man-to-man across the board. No man-to-man defender has any help at all, and you're rushing. Theoretically, you're rushing more than they can block.
You're sending one more guy than they have to protect.
They can
because
protect.
Of, you know, each side's got 11, and your quarterback doesn't block anybody.
Right.
And your safety is kind of your quarterback of the defense, and he stays back and kind of watches. But if you take that safety and rush him at the quarterback, the quarterback theoretically has to throw the ball right now because as soon as that guy snaps.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And the thing is in the red zone in particular, and the Patriots were in the red zone more than any team in the league this year, so red zone will mean something in this game. That's where the Eagles did, I think I charted it, I think they had 92 red zone plays defensively. They had 18 zero blitzes in the red zone, the Eagles. That's a high number.
Yeah, and you can bet that the analytics department of the Patriots
have
sliced that off and said,
if I know it, they know it.
All right, here's a big question for me, something I've wonder about, and we're not going to know until really the game's half over. At halftime of this game, the Patriots go into the locker room, and virtually every week they can emerge, and they have a culture and the way that they prepare, that they can come out of halftime, unlike any other team, and be a completely different football team with a completely different game plan and execute it just as well as they did.
Yes.
We saw it in last year's Super Bowl. They're down 28-3 deep in the third quarter, and they have the ability to change, to tweak their offense, tweak their defense, and be different. What's going to happen in this game when they come out, and what do you anticipate? Which staff do you anticipate making the best adjustment? Because they're going to have to adjust as this game flies.
That, because Jim Schwartz has been doing this a long time, too.
That's right.
I mean, this is not, you know, he's not a young, inexperienced defensive coordinator. You know, I think from a coverage standpoint, I'm going to be real interested to see how they choose to handle Gronk. Because, yes, can Malcolm Jenkins cover almost any tight end man-to-man? Yes, but Gronk
probably
is not any tight end.
Probably he
can. Yes, yes.
But even if he can't, if you try and cover him 10 plays or 12 plays, nine of those plays, you may not.
Right.
And particularly with Brady, he can fit it in there.
Yeah.
And that's a big catch radius to cover.
So the Gronk factor is big, of course, and that becomes a function of where Gronk lines up. See, one of the things, as you know, the Patriots, I think, do better than any team in the league is their formation multiplicity.
Yeah, they hide guys.
They hide guys, right. And it could be at the back James White. It could be Gronk. Because it's easy to say double Gronk, but let's say Gronk is split out as the single receiver to the short side of the field. It's not so easy to double that guy.
Right. And I think one of the things is why fantasy guys hate the Patriots.
Right.
It might, you know, all of a sudden Danny Amendola gets one target last week. This week he's got 12 targets and two touchdowns.
Exactly.
Last week Gronkowski got 10 catches, 160 yards, and one touchdown.
And this week he's 3-39.
He's got three targets.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I think that makes the Patriots so difficult to defend. Plus, with Brady, you also have to defend every corner of the game because he's going to make all the throws deep, long, short, and he'll take them when they're there.
No, and they play, the Patriots play with a fullback, and they'll line up Devlin. They'll literally split him outside the numbers, not necessarily because they're going to throw it to him.
And for those of you who don't, he plays with a neck roll for crying out. I mean, but you got to cover him.
He's from the 70s, yeah.
If you put a guy out somebody has to cover him, and that puts stress on the defense.
No, they're really, really good
at
that.
My final question. A lot's been said about the run that the Patriots have been on for the last almost two decades. Bill Belichick has been stoic.
Yep.
He's been one-word answers. He's been the guy in the hoodie. he's been whatever. You know, other football fans call him the Antichrist. Whatever.
But
he's a phenomenal coach and has had a phenomenal run. This week I've seen him get off the plane here in Minneapolis wearing a fedora in honor of his dad. It's been a lot of stories coming out about how he's chuckled and guys have tried to kind of make him laugh.
Right.
And he has been a different type of coach here in this Super Bowl than he has been other years. And I'll just say this. Is that a sign of something for you?
That's a great question because you're right. He's been a little different. So you wonder if...
Is he savoring it?
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't know what's in his head, so I'm not going to sit here and say, well, he's going to retire.
This is just you and me.
I don't know that.
That's just me, too.
Yeah.
And I've talked to people about it because I notice it, but you've noticed it as
right,
well.
Right, yeah.
What's it mean? Anything?
It could. I mean, what you said, though, to start the question, you know, 8 Super Bowls in 16 years, I mean, that's, you know, and to me, as a guy who's a football guy, I think that's just built in, not getting to 8 Super Bowls, but there's no team that I can recall that literally the philosophy of the team is that there's almost no philosophy in terms of how you play every single week. Like, hey, this is the way we have to play.
Yeah.
They don't do that.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Which is really that goes against conventional
their
wisdom.
Their philosophy is that we're going to play and attack you in such a way as that our team is built to beat you.
Correct.
And whatever you do, we are going to counter that with what classic football mentality. Because if you know, if football is a little bit, if you do this, we do that.
Yeah.
And if we don't have the personnel to do that, we can't.
Right.
But they do it, and they structure their team in such ways they can execute.
Like Belichick would never say, Steve, well, our offense starts with the run game. We have to do this. Or our defense starts with this. He would never speak
it
like that.
It starts with your weakness.
Yeah, right.
And that's
it starts with what's the best way to play that team.
Right.
You know,
Yeah. So really, you have noticed Bill Belichick being a little different. I have, too. I don't know what that means.
Well, I think if you see him smile once, he'd be a little different.
Yeah.
And we have seen him smile.
Yeah. Somebody, he's chuckled once or twice here, which is Greg Cosell, NFL Films, thank you so much for
joining
us.
Steve, really appreciate it.
We'll send it back to you guys in the studio.
All right. Steve Tasker, thanks very much with Greg Cosell. A lot of good insight there from Greg Cosell. And Steve.
Yeah.
Steve, you can tell he's been thinking about the game. He's loaded with takes.
He's down there. Yeah, he does have his takes. He's down there. Steve, does he watch film? You think he's
– it sounds like he's thought about this game a lot, though,
yeah.
Right?
He's thought a lot about Bill Belichick smiling a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, he's talking a lot about Belichick. Maybe this is the last rodeo.
I don't think so. I think he would at least – I think Bill Belichick, now that he wasn't able to keep Jimmy Garoppolo, I think he would like to have a succession plan in place, a quarterback in place for Tom Brady so that he can set that organization up moving forward. But who knows? I could be totally wrong.
What do we do with the catch rule? The commissioner says it's time to go back to the drawing board. What do you think? Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550 and – toll free, 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy, Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio in Orchard Park. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. We're doing our little part here from Orchard Park. John Murphy and Donald Jones. All the action's out in Minnesota where Steve Tasker's.
We shouldn't even get credit for this show.
Don't put in for this day. This is not a real work day for Donald and I. But we're going to get back to Steve. He's got Tequila Spike scheduled to join him in the next hour. Lorenzo Alexander later in the day. Maybe a couple of more guests, Jim Kelly, et cetera. All that coming up from Minneapolis, the site of the Super Bowl this week. At the Super Bowl yesterday, the commissioner, Roger Goodell, met with the media, talked about a variety of topics, including his assertion that it's time to start over again on the catch rule. How to define a catch. Here's what the commissioner said yesterday to the media in Minneapolis.
From our standpoint, I think I would like to start back instead of adding to the rule or subtracting the rule, is start over again and look at the rule fundamentally from the start. Because I think when you add or subtract things, you can still lead to confusion. And these rules are very complex. You have to look at what the unintended consequences are of making a change, which is what the Competition Committee, in my view, does so well and with so much thought. We're trying to supplement that here a little bit by, in advance of their analysis, giving them some thought starters of the ideas that we think we could focus on. My history on this, whether it's celebration rule or the extra point or any rule that we've implemented, is that we try to encourage them to focus on two or three things that we think will make a big difference in our game. Clearly, catch, no catch has been a lot of discussion and a lot of disagreement over. And I think we can clarify this rule. I think we can do it with a lot of hard work, focus, and get to a place where I'm not going to tell you there won't be controversy, but I believe that we can get to a much better place.
Well, good for them. I applaud the effort. And Goodell mentioned that they brought in a group of about 5 Hall of Fame receivers and a handful of coaches to talk about this, what is and what is not a catch. Goodell said they went through 150 plays. They had disagreements there. But it sounds like the process has begun, Donald, and I salute that. They're trying anyway. And I'd love it if they simplify. To start over, you talk about we can add to it. That makes me cringe. You know, more right, more standards that have to be applied, whether it's a catch or not. I think they should peel away some of the restrictions, some of the standards towards establishing whether it's a catch.
Simple is better. For my money, simple is better. I mean, you look back at, and I compare this to, and it's totally different, but I still can compare it to, you look back at, not this season, but the last season of Rex Ryan with the defense and how confused they were. It seemed like a lot of the time, every game, there were so many different confusing parts of that game where the defense just looks like, where am I supposed to be right now? And guys don't know where they're supposed to be, and it's because they were adding so many different things to that defense. And then you get to this year where you didn't have that many times where you're looking at it and you're like, man, they don't look like they know where they are. And it's because they simplified the defense. They simplified the scheme. For me, the instant replay, simplify it. Take it away. Let the refs do their job. All right? You get paid money to do your job. Do your job. And your job is that a catch? You're standing right there on the play. You can see it. There are multiple refs on the field. You can see it. Is that a catch? Oh, I didn't see the ball move. All right. There it is right there. Let's get away from all of the different camera angles and having to go to instant replay, where now you're looking at it from 10 different angles and you can say, well, the ball moved here, it didn't move here. It moved in this angle, but it didn't move on this angle. So is it a catch or is it not a catch? That's just too much. And it slows the game down. There's too much involved with it. Let the ref make the call on the field. The players know that was a catch or not. The refs can tell if that was a catch or not. If the ref can see the ball move, then it's not a catch. If he can't see it, then leave it as a catch.
Goodell says, time to start over on the catch rule. What do you say? Where do you start? We'll take more phone calls on this coming up after the top of the hour. 803-0550, the number. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Or on Twitter, where do you start with renewing the catch rule, with redoing the catch rule? We'll talk about that when we return. Plus, Steve Tasker with Tequila Spikes coming up when we return as well. Stick around. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
We've got the update from One Bills Drive with plenty of Super Bowl news coming out now. Rob Gronkowski still in concussion protocol, limited during Wednesday's workout for Super Bowl 52, according to head coach Bill Belichick. No post-practice report yet today on today's practice. Gronkowski went through the session without the red non-contact jersey he wore during previous practices. He says he'll be ready to play. Tom Brady also practiced with black tape on his right hand. On the Eagles side, they've got some issues with illnesses. Defensive tackle Timmy Jernigan did not practice yesterday because of illness. Running back Jay Ajayi, ankle. Defensive tackle Fletcher Cox with a calf. And linebacker Daniel Ellerbe with a hamstring. Full participants in practice. Ronald Darby missed his media session with the Eagles today because of illness. Super Bowl 52 coming up on Sunday at Minneapolis. Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, says it's time to start over again on the catch rule, one of the most controversial aspects of the NFL rulebook. Goodell says he'd like to start back in terms of subtracting from the rule, start over again to try to define what's a catch. The commissioner put together a group including five Hall of Fame receivers who looked at 150 plays, all in an effort to redefine what constitutes a catch in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers, Packers quarterback, says he was surprised as anyone to see his quarterback's coach Alex Van Pelt leave the Packers last month. He doesn't sound too happy about it either. He told ESPN Radio that some of the coaching changes there were a little strange. He said they did not consult with him before they made the change on Alex Van Pelt. Van Pelt has gone on to become the new quarterback's coach for the Cincinnati Bengals. Still no deal for Johnny Manziel with the CFL Hamilton Tiger Cats. His deadline passed yesterday without an agreement. The Tiger Cats issued a statement that left open a possibility of a contract at some point for Manziel in Hamilton. And the Buffalo Sabres homestand continues. Game two of the five-game homestand tonight. The first of nine home games in February. They are home against the Florida Panthers tonight. 7 o'clock faceoff at KeyBank Center. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Let us know what you think about the catch rule. Donald, we've talked about that a lot. I want to talk to you also, Donald, about Aaron Rodgers, not consulted on the fact that Alex Van Pelt was let go as his quarterback coach. I think I told you, I may have told you this off air. I ran into Alex at Jim Kelly's daughter's wedding a couple of weeks ago, and he's always hilarious. And he had made the switch, fired by Green Bay, went on to Cincinnati. And I kind of asked him what's up, not in a reporter sense, but just tell me about that switch. And he said, you know, this is Van Pelt, classic Van Pelt. I figured I'd done as much as I can for Aaron Rodgers, and mm-hmm. I told him I can't help you anymore, and I decided to leave. I mean, this is Aaron Rodgers he's talking about. But Van Pelt is pretty highly regarded. You know, there's kind of a when something like that happens, a team that's had success with a quarterback who's one of the elite quarterbacks in the league, and when a coach leaves, you almost think, well, maybe Aaron Rodgers asked for a change. Turns out, no. Rodgers told Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio they did not consult him. He said there was a close connection between quarterback and quarterback coach, and he called it an interesting decision. Now, look, players don't get to choose who their position coaches will be, right? I mean, that's kind of a slippery slope you don't want to go down.
Yeah, no, you don't get to – this is not the NBA where LeBron James is the GM of the team. But you should at least talk to certain players. If you're talking about Rodgers, Brady, Peyton Manning, you know, Drew Brees, one of those guys, at least just talk to them a little bit about what's going on, you know, because they do have a certain relationship, and that work relationship that they have with that position coach is important. It's very important to – that player, I mean, there might be little things that coach might do with that player on Sundays that might help that player out. And especially if you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers who, I mean, he is your team. Let's just be honest. Without Aaron Rodgers, we saw it this year. They were a totally different team without Aaron Rodgers in the lineup on Sundays. They need him. He has bailed them out time in, time out, year in, year out. I mean, you see them start out horrible, and then he just goes on this incredible run, making incredible throws. So you need to at least talk to him about some moves that are being made, just so that at least he knows and it's not a shock, because then he might feel a certain way towards the organization about something.
So how would that work? Mike McCarthy would go to Rodgers maybe at their end of the season meeting and say, look, thinking about making a change at the quarterback coaching spot. What do you think? That's fair, right?
I mean, fair.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. And I don't think that you would get into a position where, well, Aaron Rodgers doesn't like it, so we're gonna stick with this coach. But at least Aaron Rodgers knows what's going on, so it's not just like you blindsided him with firing one of the guys who might be one of the guys that helps him tick on Sundays.
Yeah. I mean, it might feel like a blindside to Aaron
Rodgers. Yeah, I think so. I mean, for him to come out and say something like that, I think it shows you that he was totally blindsided by this because Aaron Rodgers has been around a long time. He knows things to say and things not to say in the media. Typically, you don't want a player coming out saying, well, they didn't tell me. You know, that's kind of like a slap in the face to the head coach. But Aaron Rodgers obviously feels like he was blindsided in this whole thing.
Fortunately, for his sake, Van Pelt winds up, you know, on his feet. Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
Coaching Andy Dalton and the Cincinnati Bengals quarterbacks.
Now you can coach up Andy Dalton.
Yeah. A little bit different challenge in there.
A little different challenge.
All right, we are live here in One Bills Drive. We're going to continue our discussion of what constitutes a catch, but our man Steve Tasker is covering Super Bowl 52 for us, and he's standing by live right now in Minnesota at Radio Row, and he's standing by with one of the all-time favorite players in recent Buffalo Bills history, Takeo Spike, sitting down with Steve Tasker. Let's go live to Minnesota for that. Steve.
Thanks, Murphy. You're right. Takeo's here, and he's for us. You know, I didn't know this, but he's got this book called The Mask, and it's a coffee table book with great Hall of Fame linebackers across the league and across history of the league. And he got access that a lot of people don't get into their personal lives and what makes them passionate about what they did, why they were successful in what they did. And this is the linebacker edition, and they're going to come out with other editions as well. Which is, I got to tell you, everybody's promoting something. This is a good idea.
Yeah.
For guys like I think that's a great idea.
Thank you.
Because the league gets a bad rap for all the stuff that happened, guys getting arrested. And all. There's a lot of great guys that are very successful human beings, outstanding human beings, and they're successful for a reason. And it's great that they had this idea of showing what it takes to be a great linebacker.
Yeah, but it's unfortunate because the reality of it is we all get painted with the same paintbrush.
That's right.
But I'm here to tell everybody with my book Behind the Mask, I came up with the concept because every morning I woke up, I felt like I was chasing greatness and I wanted to be great. And so I saw other Hall of Fame linebackers that came before me. And so I was like, you know what? Not only will I tell my story of my defining moment of greatness, of what made me turn when the light bulb came on, I'm going to go get other Hall of Fame linebackers and share their story, their most intimate stories, that's something that has never been told before. And that's how I came up with the concept.
You know, it's amazing, too. People say, I want to be great. And they think you have to be fast, big and strong. You have to be a great athlete. You have to be a certain height and weight. And really, the thing that's the most common about them isn't any of those things. It's what's inside, what motivates them.
Oh, it's the
right?
desire.
It's nothing about the physical. I mean, the physical ability gets you looked at. But the thing that sets you apart is just what this book is. Your book is about. It's what kind of – it's that fire. It's the something that happened to them. It's something that changed their perspective.
Yeah.
I've talked to quarterbacks, and Drew Brees is a great example. He was – they were sure in San Diego he couldn't play, and they drafted Phillip Rivers because of it.
Yep.
And when they drafted Phillip Rivers, he said, what? And it changed him. That
changed
last year, that last year in San Diego, he became – Drew Brees, and now he's one of the greatest of all time because they drafted somebody to replace him, and it was that moment that changed it for him. And every player has a story like that.
Every player has a story. I even give you another story out of the book, Mike Singletary.
Right.
He was not allowed to play football because he grew up in a Pentecostal household. Their belief that kids were not allowed to play sports. So what happened at the age of 12, two of his brothers accidentally died. One drowned, another one died of carbon monoxide, fell asleep in the car. At that time, his father left the family for Mike Singletary. His mother looked at him and said, Mike, I need for you to be the man of the family. 12 years old, the youngest out of nine. I say, Mike, what did you do? He said, Takeo, I went to my room and I just cried and I started to write. And I asked him, I said, what did you write? He said, little did I know I was writing down my vision board and my plan for the rest of my life. I said, what was on the paper? He said, I wanted to play football and get a Division I scholarship. He went to Baylor. I wanted to become an All-American. Check. Yeah. He wanted to go to the first, get be drafted. He went to the Bears. He wanted to be a Pro Bowler, won a Super Bowl ring. At the age of 12 years old, he wrote that down on paper. And those are the type of stories when we talk about my book Behind the Mask that I went and I searched for, because I can guarantee you this, I researched so hard that the stories in the book, you can't find them within the first five pages of Google. That's how intimate the stories are.
Right, and that's the access that a guy like you can give. Yeah. Those guys understand you, and you had a relationship with these guys that's almost automatic. Even the old, I mean, the guy, who's the guy on the, tell them who the guy on the cover is.
The guy on the cover is Chuck McNair.
Yeah.
Last of the 60-Minute Men. I mean, and it was crazy to me. He fought in World War II.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of his defining moments. He said he saw bullets coming to hit the plane. And for him, he talked about, if I ever get out of this plane, I know what I'm going to go back to PA and do.
Right.
And that was the start of Concrete Charlie.
Well, there you go.
We got Cornelius Biscuit, one of your old teammates.
Yeah, I know. Biscuit's in the book.
Biscuit is in the book. So we got a lot of love, man. I took a lot of pride, and I wanted to make sure I went back and picked a guy out of every decade to try to cover the bases of how the league, what the league started from and how it's evolved.
All right. Tell me about this now. You played for a year in Philly, and you played for those years in Buffalo. So you have a connection that people in Buffalo will kind of understand. Tell me about Philly fans, how they compare to Buffalo fans, because we've seen Philly fans, and they've got a reputation around the league as being very passionate. But it's a different kind of passion than Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
It's different.
It's love, and then it's passion.
Yeah.
And they are very – they have love, too, but it's very passionate.
Right.
And the thing about Philly fans is you're not going to come into our stadium with the Giants, Redskins –
Dallas Cowboys,
we don't want no lip service out of you. And if you do, I'm going to let you know who my loyalty is to. And that's the difference. Buffalo is, hey, we got love for our team, but we'll travel to Iceland to see y'all guys play.
Right, right.
You know, that's how it is. And that's the thing that I appreciated out of both cities, from playing in both cities.
Talk about this year's Philly team getting to the Super Bowl. They got they had an MVP type of year from Carson Wentz. He goes down to the injury, and then Nick Foles comes in, and all of a sudden is caught fire.
Yeah,
and like Case Keenum did here in Minnesota, and you see it once in a while. But there is a vibe coming out of Philly that's pretty special. I mean, those guys are together, and talk about the X's and O's. Talk about what you think is important about this matchup with the Patriots, who seem to be here every year, every other year, and a Philly team who has built something.
I think you got a Philly team that's obviously they're riding the wave of the underdog. But I think the most important thing what happened was 2 weeks ago. That NFC Championship game, Doug Peterson, he did a nice job of orchestrating tendency breakers. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of plays. I saw a lot of things that he usually do in certain down and distances. He gave it to Nick Foles and said, you know what, I'm going to give you the keys to the Ferrari today.
Right.
They don't know that. They think I'm going to give you the keys to the Camry.
Right.
And he went out and he put that thing, he went from first to sixth gear immediately.
Right.
And I think that's going to be the difference in this game. Both coaches are very creative, and on the defensive side for the Philadelphia Eagles, I really like their chances because of Jim Schwartz.
Right.
And I love his tendencies as far as he could beat you either way. He could beat you with a four-man rush. He can beat you with blitzing. But the thing I love about him, it's when he does it. And I think he has a great pulse like other great defensive coordinators who implemented that in their game.
It's interesting you say that because coaches are under the microscope all the time. And it's hard for fans who don't study film and even for me and you who may watch games once in a while and kind of look at them, it's hard to pick out why this coach, like a Wade Phillips, who has been so successful throughout his career, Jim Schwartz, who's been successful throughout his career, a Kyle Shanahan, who keeps getting jobs and is now successful. I've always said the best free agents in NFL football are coordinators, not players.
Yeah.
Because they affect so much. Guys like Jim Schwartz, you can't quantify because, like you said, they pick their spots. It's an art form.
Yep.
It's an art to it. And you got to know when you're going to do it. You got to look at that other team and think, oh, I just remember. And you know what? This is the perfect time for this call. And it works for them because there isn't a list. It's a feel. It's a relationship that the defensive coordinator has combative relationship with the offensive coordinator over there and what he's seen and what he knows about and what he can figure out. And that's why you can't quantify why these guys are good, but they are.
Yeah, you can't, man. And this is what I call it. This is what separates you. You have coaches, and then you have teachers. When you look at a Dick LeBeau, when you look at a Wade, when you look at a Jim Schwartz, when you look at Bill Belichick, all these guys are great teachers. Because you can, for me, I can coach myself. If I do something wrong, I know I did it wrong.
Right.
As a coach, you telling me what I did wrong after the fact, you're not helping me. I know what I did wrong.
Right.
But when you get a teacher provides and give you concepts and they give you tendencies before it actually happens. And when it resonates with you in your brain, when you can make a play from that, that's a great teacher.
Takeo Spikes, great book, Behind the Mask, the Linebackers Edition. Great seeing you. Thanks for coming on. Good luck. Enjoy the week here.
I will, man, as much as I can. It's 2 degrees outside right now.
All right.
3 degrees.
Back to you, Murph.
Okay. Give our best to Takeo, one of the great guys. Was he here on set? Or I know we had him on the show a couple times.
No. We had him on the phone.
On the phone?
Yeah,
great guy.
Yeah.
Fan
great
favorite.
Guy. Still got the big neck.
Yeah, he does. I there's something about him, and you can see him connecting with fans in Philadelphia. He certainly did in Cincinnati. But here especially, something about Takeo that fans respond. Maybe it's the big neck. Fans
I'm telling
respond
you,
to
my
Takeo.
My mom, when she thinks about football players, she thinks about big necks, right? And he's the one that she's thinking about. She thinks everybody has a neck like that. I'm like, Ma, it's not like that.
Everybody's not like that.
Yeah, he's just half alien or something like that.
But I think his intensity and his passion for the game is what really got people going here, right? And everywhere.
She doesn't know that. All she knows is his neck size.
And we talked to him about that book, too. It's an interesting book. We went through that book with him when he was on the show with us about a year or so ago.
It's always good to get backstories.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people, I think a lot of people like backstories, but you only get to see what you see on the field. And here in the NFL, everybody's on edge. And you don't really say too much in press conferences and things like that. When you do interviews, you don't give the backstory to your life or anything like that, or some of the most intimate moments of why you, what made you tick and different things like that. And so when you get a book like that he wrote, that he could, obviously he knows all of these players, and those guys feel comfortable enough to give him those intimate stories, it's something good to read.
Hey, Takeo, a former Eagle, has great regard for the Eagles fan base, obviously, but more and more in the reporting that we get from not just Steve but everybody out there, you get a sense that people are starting to think Philadelphia might do this, Philadelphia could do this. I feel like we're being set up for a big letdown Sunday. It is still Tom Brady. It is still his uncanny ability to pull victory from the jaws of defeat. It is still Bill Belichick, the best tactician in the game in recent history. They're still the Patriots, and I don't there's not much drama around this game as far as, the Patriots, Gronkowski, whatever. Brady's thumb is fine. They're kind of going about their week pretty businesslike, as they always do. And after last Super Bowl, Donald, after seeing them down and you would think out at halftime against the Falcons, I remember I was in Texas watching the game on TV and thinking, oh, this is different. The Falcons have the jump on them. And then there was one play. I think it was a sack. It was a sack. Matt Ryan's sack and a fumble. Patriots recovered third quarter. And I thought, said to my wife sitting right next to me,
here it goes.
Here they come. And they did. And I just think we're going to be let down. Those of us who would love to see the Patriots, come up short this week. There's this, too, and this is an interesting take from Bills fans. And maybe it's from people all over the country, NFL fans. They've won it so many times, the Patriots. What difference would another Super Bowl win make? Are you going to hate them any less if they lose this game?
No.
They're still the Patriots, greatest team of the last 20 years. What difference would one more Super Bowl make? I don't know. I hope they lose.
We all hope they lose.
Yeah.
I think it's – I'm telling you, it's not just Bills fans. It's fans
it's America.
All – it's America. Yeah. America hopes that they lose this Super Bowl and they don't go on to win another one. But
if historically, they don't what on, difference will that
exactly,
make to anybody?
Nothing. Exactly. I mean, this still is going to be the best team over the last 20 years. So you really can't say – you can't really – you have to respect what they've done.
Yeah.
As much as you hate them, you have to respect what they've done. And like you said, you think you're being set up for a letdown. I remember thinking the same thing when that happened. And I'm telling you, what it really comes down to is the experience. The fact that they've been in this thing so much, the AFC Championship game so much, these big moments so many times, and it's not just Brady. There's a bunch of guys on that team now. Chris Hogan, this is back-to-back Super Bowls for him. They've been on this stage, so it's a normal game for them. The other teams, like the Falcons last year, think about it. That team, that offense last year under Matt Ryan, under Kyle Shanahan, was like they were something close to the greatest show on turf. I mean, that offense was going. It was moving. The high-octane offense, number one offense in the league, you couldn't stop them. And they came out early in that game, and they showed that. We can't be stopped. And then what happened? You go into halftime, you come back out in the third quarter, and things shift a little bit. And then you get that big play, and like you said, especially here in Buffalo, everybody probably was thinking the same thing. All right, here it goes.
Here it comes.
And I remember saying the same exact thing. Uh-oh, here we go. And then what happens is, and this happened to the Jaguars, and it has happened to so many teams, Buffalo teams here in the past, you get into that second half, and the Patriots make their adjustments, and they'll get a big play, and they'll get another big play, and then all of a sudden, that you can feel that momentum has shifted now. And because they've been in that moment so many times, and they have Tom Brady who's been in that moment so many times, and the other team has not been in that moment on this stage at all, that team, from the coaching staff down through the players, will start to press. And then they'll do something where you're like, what are you doing? Where the Falcons last year, all they had to do in the fourth quarter was run the football.
Yep.
They had the game, but they decided to throw the football. And what happens? You get the big plays, you get something to go against you. Tom Brady gets the ball back. Boom, touchdown, that easy. He gets the ball back again, boom, another touchdown. And next thing you know, the game is tied and you're going to overtime. And once they tied the game up, I was like, the Patriots have this thing wrapped up.
Yep.
It was, you still were going into overtime, but I'm like, they're going to win this game. There's no way that they lose this game now. And they ended up winning that game.
We will make our Super Bowl picks, Donald and I, tomorrow on the show, but all the discussion all week and even going back to last week, and as much as you'd like to think, hey, this could be a game. This could be a game. The Eagles can get, you know, pass rush with four guys, and Schwartz is pretty good. All of that is true. But in the end, it's still going to be Tom Brady versus Nick Foles.
Mm-hmm.
Mismatch, no matter how you cut it. It's still going to be Belichick versus a good group of coaches at Philadelphia. You know, and I like the Eagles coaching group. I like the way they play it. I like the way they take risks and are not afraid to roll the dice. They're going to have to. We'll make our picks tomorrow, but
yeah.
I got to sleep on it.
You got to sleep on
it. I'm not going to pick an upset, I can tell you that. What's the point spread? I don't even know.
I don't know the point spread right now.
Look that up.
Yeah, we'll look that up. Right, will you, by any chance, watch the halftime show?
No. It's
no?
too long. Is it? Who is it?
Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Justin Timberlake.
No. I like Justin Timberlake, I guess. I couldn't name anything that he's done.
Somebody just tweeted me and said, because I saw Justin Timberlake on Twitter, actually, and I retweeted it. He was, like, on the field, you know, recording himself. And I was like, bring Janet Jackson back out. And so people have responded to that, if you remember what happened with Janet Jackson.
Yeah, that might be the last halftime show I watched.
Really?
Did I remember?
It's the last one in your mind. And then somebody said he should do a Prince tribute since they're in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be great if he does a Prince
tribute. Yeah, he'll do something. He's great. He's a great entertainer.
Yeah, he is.
But I don't know if I'll make time. I mean, that 25-minute
halftime. You step up, go wash some clothes.
Oh, you can do a lot of stuff.
You won't even be here.
I'll be in Florida. I'll go out and watch the sunset or something. All right, hey, what do you think about the catch rule? The commissioner brought it up yesterday. The commissioner says it's time to take a look at it, time to strip it down, start over again on the catch rule. What do you say about that? Phone lines are open for that, 803-0550, the number, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. That's our Twitter poll as well. And it's pretty – I guess I didn't anticipate it would be this lopsided. Goodell says it's time to start over on the catch rule. We ask, where do you start? On Twitter – three-quarters of respondents, 76% say simple, possession and 2 feet down. 13% say don't use replay at all on catches. I'm down with that. 9% have something else in mind. 2% say more replay on catches. Can't believe that. I feel like it's not that simple. I hope they can make it simpler, but just I would love it if they could just say, you know what, we're going to leave it up to the officials. We're going to take replay out of it. We're going to tell the officials replay is out on catches. You make the call. The guy needs to have possession, and he needs to have 2 feet down. You interpret anything else from that. You know, we've had the guy on Football Zebras, Ben Ostro, who tweeted out something interesting, Donald, about that. He went back to the 1953 NFL rule book. And you know what it said? Can I read it to you? He tweeted this out. The rule on what constitutes a catch in 1953. And this was like the starting point for catches. Here it is, Article 6. A player is in possession when he has held the ball long enough to give him such control as to enable him to perform any act common to the game. Pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
Put that, you know, on a card if you need to, on a wristband for officials. And when you start to look at a catch, has he held the ball long enough to give him control as to enable him to perform any act common to the game? I can live with that. And let the officials work out their interpretation in real time, without replay, without delays, without second-guessing from the replay center in New York City. Yeah. I could live with that. I really could live with that, something that simple as long as it's enforced on the field by real live human beings watching the play right there.
I'm telling you, this is – technology has really made this game a little bit worse because of the cameras, because of instant replay. And you have the camera overhead and cameras all over the stadium. It has made this game worse because you are taking the job away from the officials, basically. And so you're paying these guys for no reason. I mean, you pay these guys to make calls. Let them make the calls. If I see the ball move, then it's not a catch. If I don't see the ball move, then it's a catch. And that's it. We don't need to go back up to New York for any of that stuff. All that does is make the game longer for no reason. Let's keep it in the hands of the officials. Take the rest of the stuff, like the dancing, celebrations, and all of that stuff, out of the hands of the officials and let them make the calls on the field.
Will they always get it right?
No. And
that's all right. They don't always get it right with replay either.
Right. But when you go through all of these different replays and then people are like, man, that's a catch, and then you come back and the refs say that's not a catch, then it just makes it it makes it worse because now people have watched this thing 20 times in the last 30 seconds and you come back with a total different outcome than what people on TV are saying. And so everybody's upset because you're like, how did you watch this thing so many times under the hood and come back and you're still wrong?
How did that happen? So we want to hear from you. We got phone lines open. We'll do that throughout the course of the afternoon. The commissioner says time to go back to the drawing board, start fresh from what constitutes a catch, and start over again to try to define what a catch is. We'll take your thoughts on that on the telephone line at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. When we come back, we will go back to Minnesota to the Super Bowl. Steve Tasker standing by there, and Jim Kelly, Hall of Fame quarterback, scheduled to join him when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio. We're going to go back to Steve Tasker in a minute or two here. We're talking a lot about the catch rule. The commissioner says he's ready to take it back to the drawing board, and we want to hear from you about that. So give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. A couple of tweets on this. Mark VF tweets in, how about starting over with the officiating? Okay. Another tweet, which I find interesting, this is to my point about taking the technology out of it. Bob Loblaw tweets in, completely disagree. We need less in the hands of the officials. The human element is the players on the field. We don't need it in the enforcement of rules. More technology until all referees are obsolete. Didn't they make a movie about that?
Why do you want to take referees totally out of the game? I mean,
what's the name of that Mel Gibson movie?
Geez.
Thunderball or something? Right? Yeah, remember that?
I don't remember that movie.
Yeah, too much technology. I don't know. Do you really want referees obsolete?
Yeah, I mean, too much technology. I don't want that much technology in the game. I feel like we're playing Spaceball at that point.
Yeah. Joshua Hauschneck, I think simplifying the catch rule would make it more consistent. The more analysis and instant replays occur, the more it muddles the game. Yes. The more time you spend looking at it, debating it, watching the, you know, frame by frame, the ball slightly moving, did it come out? I mean, it's kind of tough to watch a game, and, man, I hope it doesn't happen Sunday just because I want to watch a game without getting aggravated. I hope it doesn't happen where as soon as the catch is made, the network announcers, and they're great. Collinsworth is great. Al Michaels is great. But invariably now, when there's a catch that's close, they get to, well, we'll see. Did he survive the ground? Did the ball move? I mean, as soon as the play, the whistle's not even blown yet, and they're already second-guessing and encouraging that sort of, rewatching. I get tired of that. I didn't tune in to watch technology. I didn't tune in to watch all the different camera angles, you know? Yeah. I get tired of that, and that's why I disagree with more technology and obsolete officials. I'm good with officials being as best as they can, just like the players, as best as they can do, the best they can do to call a good game and to know the rules and enforce them. I'm good with that. I'm okay
with that.
That's
my thing. I mean, you get paid to make calls on the field. Let me do my job.
Yeah.
That's really it. Let me do my job. As a player, I got to do my job. As an official, I got to do my job. You're taking that away from me. And I mean, the officials now, I don't know what their thought is on it, but I would think they're probably like, whatever, it's going to go back to New York anyway. Let me just call this a catch. It'll go back to New York, and then they'll make the decision. But ultimately, I feel like as a fan now watching it, as a former player, let the officials do their job. Do what you pay them to do. If they miss it, then that's just something that we all have to live with, and yeah, they have to live with. But when you start going to so many different camera angles, it just – all it does for me is raise my blood pressure.
Me
and
too.
And I get tired of it. As soon as they start saying – like you said, I mean, the whistle sometimes hasn't even blown yet. And Tony Romo's like the famous one for this. This was his first year broadcasting, and he's like, all types of sound effects.
Know,
and you're like, yeah, and you're like, dude. Chill out, man. I don't want to look at this again. Yeah. Go to the next play, please.
I mean, the play that we're all hung up on here in Buffalo is the Calvin Benjamin catch, no catch at New England. And I just can't get over how that official, his name is Zimmer, Larry Zimmer, on the back line, right in position, perfect position, saw the play, pointed to the feet, both feet down, pointed to his officiating partner at the goal line as if to say, you saw what I saw, right? Mm-hmm. He could not have been more buttoned up on that call. He got it right. Points to the ground, looks at his partner, signals touchdown, and after a long delay, and the delay's not what bothers me, but after a long delay, no, that's not a touchdown. Really? Do we want that? Do we really want – how could that official be in better position?
Right.
How could he go through his mental checklist and, oh, by the way, about 3 seconds, less than that, to come up with all the elements of a catch, and then to have that call in perfect position and then to overrule it? Come on.
Yeah,
just not cool.
I think you take it away. I don't want more technology. I'm sorry. I don't even know what more technology are we talking about. A chip in a ball? I mean, more cameras on the field? What are we talking about?
What are we talking about?
Let the officials do their job. Let the players make the plays and the officials make the calls, and that's it. Simple.
Like to talk with you about that. Phone line's open. Steve Tasker's been doing his job all day long, all for the last 3 days. He's going to do it again tomorrow. And we're going to send it back out to the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 52 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Steve on Radio Row with a Hall of Fame teammate. Let's send it out to Steve.
Thanks, Murph. And as you can see, we're sitting here with my buddy Jim Kelly. Jim, it's good to see you, man. And first of all, while we're here in Buffalo, talking back to Buffalo, tell us how you're feeling, man.
I'm doing all right. Next week is going to be a big week for me. Yeah. I traveled to New York City for some tests that you know, we'll see what happens. But just need the prayers, without doubt.
Good stuff. All right. And you're here, you know, you talk about a guy who's the perfect guy to be here. You're with Merck, the company, and your cancer awareness and getting a game plan against cancer. I mean, you're the perfect guy for that.
And it's interesting because Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, is Cancer Awareness Day.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable how that all of a sudden is this day of the Super Bowl. But I teamed up with Merck 2 years ago. And to make a long story short, because I'm so passionate about this, that they came to me, and as they were talking about what they wanted to do, I said, wow, where were you 3 years ago when I needed all this information?
Right.
And I said, oh, I'm definitely in. And so what we do and what we're doing right now is we're challenging everybody out there to log on to yourcancergameplan.com. And when it'll pop up, there's 19 advocacy groups. Pick one, share it with your social media, and Merck will donate $5 to that foundation. And the thing is, we hope we can raise hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for all of these advocacy groups that are making a difference.
So basically, you're trying to get it's a lot of layers to that. That's kind of a good idea. So you're saying, listen, just log on to the website.
Yep.
Pick one of the groups that you're interested in that touches you, like it does for all of us, and they'll donate to it. And plus, it gives people a chance to maybe get up and maybe go to their doctor and get their own plan for their own lives.
And you're exactly right. And here's the thing, and why I teamed up with them, because they started talking about the things that I did not know about before, like how you're eating, and if you're suffering, go to the doctor.
Right.
And I mean, men out there, all the guys, and we are like that too, that if you have something that's hurting, you know, oh, I'm all right, I'll get it checked later. No, go get it done now. And there's so many other things that go with that. And the bottom line, Steve, is being able to have the right attitude, surround yourself with the right people, because as you well know, when I talk about my cancer game plan
right.
with the people from Merck and really reflect back on mine, I live by the four F's. And as you well know, number one is my faith. And knowing that all the people out there that prayed for me, and including you,
right.
That's why I'm still here. Number two is my family. And you know all my brothers. You know
right.
my wife, my two daughters. Not one time did they ever walk into my hospital room with a frown. They wanted to make sure that their attitude was good. And three, my friends. You, Bruce, Thurman, all the guys coming to see me in the hospital, the attitude that you guys did.
Right.
Not one time did you guys ever walk in with a frown on your face. You walked in with an attitude. You're going to
yeah.
make me smile that day, because there's so many people out there going through tough times now that don't have that big social network of people like I was able to
yeah.
have, like some other people. We need that. They need that. And the last one is the fans. We know that
yeah.
fans in Buffalo
yeah.
are unmatched, and they're unbelievable.
It's amazing, too, because you talk about, we had Mike Haynes on yesterday, and he was prostate cancer, and he
yep.
was a victim of that. And the thing that strikes me about your thing, if you're hurting or if you've got something, he had some stuff going on. He thought, that's just weird. But it was cancer symptoms that he had no idea that that's what some of the symptoms of prostate cancer were. And it ended up he got absolutely lucky by going in. And I think that's the key thing to all that. For guys like you coming in, just tell people, listen, get checked. It's nothing to get checked. And make sure it happens. And it's great to see you here in Minneapolis doing well, man. It's great seeing him.
And I just urge everybody right now, and I know that we got so many different interviews to do, but yourcancergameplan.com, log on to Steve, it's always seen good
great
seeing you.
Jim,
I love
Kelly.
You, man.
We'll see you back at yep. Murph, we'll send it back to you.
All right. Hall of Famer Jim Kelly with Wall of Famer Steve Tasker, a couple
yeah.
of former teammates, and a very strong message from Jim Kelly, and we send our best wishes, wish him well, hope that his checkouts go okay. Guy like Kelly, and I witnessed it last year in Houston, goes to Radio Row, and he is booked.
Oh, yeah.
Interview. Every 10 yeah. minutes, I think they block him out for 3 or 4 hours or so, and he is basically hitting up everything, every single radio show.
Ooh.
With, you know, he's sponsored by Merck out there to deliver that message. And then every once in a while, you just get somebody wandering around, which are the great guests to get, I found last year.
Those guys are like, how come nobody's interviewing me?
Yeah. People don't know who they are.
And then somebody calls and you're like, yes.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go have fun
yeah.
on this interview.
Yeah. One of my favorite times last year at the Super Bowl, Radio Row, we had some downtime. I must have had a taped interview or something. And just wandering around near our radio booth all by himself was Joe Buck from Fox, who was calling the game. And I just went, I didn't get him on the show because we didn't have any time for it at that point. I just went over and talked to him for like 15, 20 minutes. Great
yeah.
guy. And, you know, and a lot of people, you know, do their impressions, make fun of him. I found him to be engaging and smart and funny, and we had a tremendous conversation for 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Off air, you know, not scheduled, no handlers, nothing. He wasn't promoting anything, wasn't selling anything.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Those are rare. Those kind of encounters are rare on Radio Row.
Especially the fact that, you know, he didn't have anything scheduled for anybody for 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
He's calling the game
yeah.
on Fox, so he's an important part of this game.
Yeah.
He's not playing in the game, but for the people who are watching on TV, he's an important part of the game, and he didn't have anything. And the fact that he actually stood there and talked to you for 15, 20 minutes
little
is
old
big.
Me.
Yeah, little old Murph, John Murphy from Buffalo.
Hi, Joe.
From Buffalo, who still hadn't been to the playoffs in 17
yeah.
years. But I did the podcast with Lorenzo last week.
Right.
And Lorenzo was like, man, you know, I go to Radio Row and I still don't get any sponsors. I don't get the bunch of interviews, any of that stuff. And I'm all pro. I done been to Pro Bowl MVP, all types
yeah.
of stuff. I still don't get noticed out there.
Yeah, it's a crazy atmosphere there. And Steve's doing a heck of a job. And we're going to go back to him now because we had Jim Kelly on, a Hall of Famer, a moment ago. Coming up Saturday is the vote for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, with the modern era finalists among those being ready to go. 15 modern era finalists, including Steve's next guest. It's his second year as a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's part of the Jacksonville Jaguars radio crew. He is also a longtime Pro Bowl performer for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Steve standing by with Tony Boselli at the Super Bowl. Steve, take it away.
Thanks, Murph. I'm sitting here with Tony Boselli, who's a big week for you. You're going to be working the sidelines
yeah.
for the game for Westwood One. Boomer and Kevin Harlan are
yep.
in the booth, and Ed Werder's on the far side. You're going to be doing this sidelines. But you know, first and foremost, let's talk about you're a finalist for the Hall of Fame. You had a phenomenal career. You had all those great years in Jacksonville. Talk about what it means. I know it's just It's almost too much to talk about.
It's overwhelming at some one level because, you know, you get asked all the time, like, well, how are you going to feel about it? I'm like, I have no idea. It's something I've never done. And like you and every guy who's ever played the game, you play to win a Super Bowl. That's first and foremost. And then, you know, this is obviously a huge individual honor. But we also always like being in control of what we do. And that's the one thing. When you play, you love it because you go on the field and you can go battle and control it.
Yeah.
This is something I have no control over.
Right.
And so that makes it a little bit hard. But it's a huge honor just to be included with a group of guys and all great players. Right. I wouldn't want to be one of those 48 guys trying to vote. So
what do they tell you about a Saturday when – I mean, what are you going to – you have to tell them where you're going to be. You got to give them a phone number.
What hotel you're in.
Oh, they tell you what hotel you're in?
Yeah, they give you a hotel room. And I have to be there like for like a two-hour period at any time. And if you get a phone call from – Canton area code, you're not in.
Right.
You get a knock on the door, you're in.
Oh,
and
I got you.
So it's almost like a reality TV show. It's like, who's going to get voted off the island next? And so I'll be sitting in there waiting, buying time, and
watching TV.
My wife's like, well, why don't we play cards or something? I'm like, that'd be great.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Thanks, hon.
That'd be real good support.
Do you got any fours?
Yeah. Yes. That's the extent of my card playing skill.
So can you? Is it so much of a distraction you can't even think about covering the game or what?
Actually, just the opposite. So I actually am focused just thinking about the game. Been going to both practices and getting ready for it. As you know, doing sidelines, it's not as intensive as doing the boot, but you know, it's fun. It's a cool thing getting to be down there and kind of see the action.
Well, have you talked to Howie and those guys with Westwood One? Are you going to be on one sideline or the other?
So it's interesting. We're doing it different this year. Last year, for a long time, it's been James Lofton, and last year was James Lofton and I. So we each had one sideline. This year, Ed Werder is going to do all injuries and the big stories, and you know he's a better reporter than I am. And then I'm going to be an on-field analyst, kind of covering both
sides. Oh, so you're going to help Boomer. You're going to chime in with Boomer Kevin upstairs and see what you see.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Have you talked to Boomer about what you're going to talk about? Like, are you going to talk about the offensive line play, that kind of thing?
I think it's going to be – I mean, Boomer's going to be the main thing.
And then Coach, get the mic out of Boomer's hand.
We love Boomer. We love him.
He's the best.
Yeah, he's the best. And then Coach Holmgren's going to be up there giving a coach's perspective.
Oh, nice.
And then I'll be on the field chiming in. So Larry Costigan, as you know, the producer, will be kind of directing traffic and – my guess is I'll get about 3 minutes for the day.
Right. So it's all hands on deck, though. You got an analyst with with a consultant in the booth with Mike Holmgren.
That's right.
You got you on the sidelines as a player.
It's
going to
be a lot
Ed
going on.
That's awesome.
It'll be fun, though. So I think it'll be a good listen.
Yeah, well, forget the game. I hope you get in, man.
Thank
it's
you
awesome.
Very much.
We've known each other for a long time.
Long
I got a lot of respect
time.
For you. You had a great career. And even so, if it doesn't happen this year, someday I hope it does.
Well, I appreciate it.
Tony Baselli, thanks a
Thank
lot.
Thank you, sir.
We'll send it back
Thank
to you guys.
Got to be a nerve-wracking – thank you, Steve. Got to be a nerve-wracking weekend for Tony Baselli, though. You get a knock on the door if you're in or a phone call from with a Canton area code if you're out.
Yeah.
You know, what if you got an aunt in Canton who calls?
Yeah, right?
I told you, don't
– Yeah, right? You pick up like, hello? Hey, it's aunt. Something, whatever. You're like, come on, man. What are you doing? I remember draft day. I kept getting calls from people. And every time my phone would ring, it was like And I'm like, don't call me again.
Please don't call.
Yeah, please don't call. I wanted to just throw my phone. I never got – well, I ended up getting calls later in like the 6th, 7th round. But when other people were calling, I'm like, don't call me again. Don't send me a message. I don't want to hear my phone ring from anybody that I know personally.
Baselli will be waiting for the call. He's one of 15 finalists, modern era finalists, Tony Baselli. Also, Ray Lewis expected to get the call that he's in or get the knock that he's in. Brian Urlacher, according to our guests last week, help me out, from Dallas. Yeah, Rick Gosselin from the Talk of Fame Network. Mm-hmm. He said he thinks Urlacher's going to get in. He's a first-year eligible guy.
Both of them.
Edgerrin James on the 15 finalist list. Randy Moss, first-year finalist. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Terrell Owens. Not his first year, not his first rodeo. He's a finalist. Isaac Bruce is a finalist. John Lynch, the former safety. Brian Dawkins, Everson Walls, Ty Law, Baselli, we just talked about, Kevin Mawai, Joe Jacoby, Steve Hutchinson, Alan Faneca, senior finalist Robert Brazil, and Jerry Kramer, and the contributor finalist Bobby Bethard, who I think indicated we heard from last week. From Gosselin, that he figured Bobby Bethard would get in. That's a strong class, though, and some tough calls there.
It's a tough class. Last year, there were a bunch of guys that you were like that ended up getting in, and happy for them. But you were like, man, you got in, huh?
Yeah.
And you would think if the guys that are on this class were on last year's class, some of those guys wouldn't have got in. But this is going to be some tough calls when you look at and you talk about Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher, Randy Moss, T.O., Isaac Bruce, all great receivers, the bunch of linemen that are on there. I mean, it's going to be some tough calls. It's going to be some disappointed people when they get that phone call.
Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, that'll be the last fight on the card.
Yeah, that'd be most talked about. I wonder if Edgerrin James gets in.
Yeah, that's a good one too. That's a really good one. Hall of Fame vote coming up Saturday, and we wish Tony Boselli well. We thank Steve Tasker. We've got more to come today on the show, the John Murphy Show. We are live here in Orchard Park. Steve is out in Minneapolis at the Super Bowl. We've got more coming up on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Sitting here live in Orchard Park in our One Buffalo studio. Thanks for tuning in on the radio side or even on MSG. Donald, I noticed we have the same exact pullover on today. Yeah, that doesn't happen often.
It doesn't.
We should throw like, how would that work? We should have some sort of betting game that when we accidentally wear the same clothing that, I don't know.
One of us has to buy another.
One of us has to buy something. I'll figure it out. It's odd. You know, when you think of all the gear we have.
It has to be lunch.
Yeah, it's got to be lunch involved.
Yeah.
George wouldn't have it any other way in the control room.
He'd be like, oh, I didn't get any.
We're going to go back to Steve in the Super Bowl in Minneapolis. Nobody's complaining too hard about the Super Bowl in the cold in Minneapolis, right?
No, not too hard. People slid it in like Tequila. He slid it in right at the end. It's 3 degrees here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I saw something earlier today. And it was about the Cowboys have actually informed the NFL that they want to bid for future Super Bowls, and they hope to get in rotation for the game for the future. And so the question to you is, what do you think about certain stadiums, especially these new fancy stadiums, being in a rotation? You talk about Atlanta, Dallas, L.A., Vegas, these new stadiums just being in a rotation and nobody else really getting a chance to bid in for.
I mean, that's why the Super Bowl is in cold Minneapolis this week because of their new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it was in Ford Field a couple of years ago. I think there's kind of an informal rotation now, isn't there, with New Orleans, pretty steady Super Bowl host.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta, now with a new stadium, certainly the Super Bowl might even be there next year. I don't even know.
I think it is next year.
Florida, Miami, they redid that stadium. It's probably set up for a Super Bowl now. Tampa's been in the Super Bowl rotation. I don't know if they'll ever go back to New York. I don't know if that was but they, again.
They had a great week that week. They lucked out, and it was like 50 degrees that week. And then it was a blizzard the next day after the game.
So, I don't know. I guess I'd be okay. I think there's an informal rotation now. I guess Dallas, right? What about Houston? Houston's been a Super Bowl host.
Houston, Arizona.
Yeah, and then Southern California.
Yeah.
Arizona. Yeah. I mean, there's probably a good 10 places that are suitable hosts for Super Bowls now.
Is already a rotation.
Yeah.
I mean, they do this whole bidding process, but when you think about it, the Super Bowls are typically in the same places. This year, you have Minnesota, a couple of years ago, New York, but they're typically in those warm places down south because it just makes more sense to do it down there. I would think, though, the cities like Atlanta, the cities like L.A. with that new stadium, Vegas, I mean, those stadiums might get it a little bit more than others now because you have the stadium itself, but you have just the allure of the city and people wanting to go to that city and the festivities of Super Bowl week, all of that stuff is involved. So I would think that they might get a little bit more than the other cities.
So I just Googled it up, and according to this, the next four Super Bowl sites are set. Next year, as you pointed out, Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia, Super Bowl 53. Super Bowl 54, 2020, a couple years out, back to Miami, Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. Which, you know, they just retrofitted.
Now, that one was supposed to be L.A., but didn't they move it back a year because it –
Well, I think so. Mm-hmm. Super Bowl 55 going to Tampa in 2021, and Super Bowl 56 going to the new stadium, which, you know, that's February of 2022. 4 years out, I anticipate that stadium will be ready then. That sounds like that's when it'll be. It'll be at the L.A. Stadium in Hollywood Park.
Mm-hmm. You have to imagine that Vegas is coming shortly after that.
Yeah.
When's that stadium supposed to be done?
Vegas? I don't know. Have they started? I don't know.
I'm not sure if they started yet, but you would think that Vegas. It's Vegas. So you'd have to expect that one to be coming shortly after the L.A. Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So that's and most NFL events, I would think, are moving out to Vegas, L.A. You're talking about the draft. You talk about combine, all of this stuff, you would think would start to move to those stadiums where it's warm, yeah, nice,
maybe
a lot
not
of things
permanently.
To do. Yeah,
but you think rotation? Permanently? I don't know if though. Yeah, part of a rotation for sure. Mm-hmm. We're going to head back to the Super Bowl city this year, Minneapolis, Minnesota, in the third and final hour of the show. Lorenzo Alexander going to join Steve Tasker out there. We've got more to discuss, including how do you fix the catch no catch? The commissioner says let's go back to the drawing board. Where would you start with that? Would be the first thing you would do. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Got phone lines open today, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The action going on out in Minnesota, the site of the Super Bowl. The team's practicing this afternoon. Yesterday, Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski was listed as limited for practice. Head coach Bill Belichick says he remains in concussion protocol. Gronkowski's telling everybody he is going to play in the game. That is anticipated to happen. But Gronkowski yesterday went through the practice session without the red non-contact jersey he has worn previously. Tom Brady practiced and had black tape on his right hand. On the Eagles side, they're dealing with some illnesses. Timmy Jernigan, defensive tackle, did not practice yesterday because of illness. And cornerback Ron Darby missed his obligation to media session today also because of illness. Super Bowl coming up Sunday, 6:30 p.m. in Minnesota. Yesterday, speaking at the Super Bowl, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said it's time to start over again on the catch rule. Goodell mentioned that he assembled a group. A recent meeting with five Hall of Fame receivers and a number of coaches that weighed in on what is and what is not a catch. Said they went through 150 plays, various opinions. They will continue that discussion and eventually make some sort of report to the competition committee. Goodell says he would like to, instead of adding to the catch, non-catch rule, subtract from the rule. The commissioner also said that at his annual news conference that the league prefers keeping the Carolina Panthers where they've been in Carolina since their inception more than two decades ago. Hamilton Tiger Cats unable to reach a deal just yet with Johnny Manziel. And the deadline, Manziel's self-imposed deadline, passed yesterday without an agreement. The Tiger Cats hold the exclusive negotiating rights for the controversial quarterback. His agent, Manziel's agent, said he'd give the Tiger Cats until yesterday to offer a deal, but no deal has been struck. And the Buffalo Sabres in town tonight for an Atlantic Division game. It is game two of a five-game homestand for the Sabres and the first of nine home games in the month of February. It's the Florida Panthers tonight, one of five NHL teams that Jack Eichel has not scored a goal against. 7 o'clock faceoff tonight at the KeyBank Center downtown. It is the John Murphy Show. John Murphy here, Donald Jones alongside. We're coming to you live from our One Buffalo studio in chilly Orchard Park, New York, but in even chillier Minnesota, actually Bloomington, Minnesota, the Mall of America, the site of Radio Row for this year's Super Bowl 52. We have Steve Tasker standing by to join us live with a special guest. And Steve, let's throw it to you. I understand there was some sort of giveaway of candy that you took part in, some sort of
Yeah, Murph, you're right, Murph. There was, I'll show you. Somebody dropped this in my lap. It's full of Skittles.
Right.
Wow.
Bags of Skittles, and they just gave it to me. And I'm on such a sugar buzz right now. I'm joined by Lorenzo Alexander, you guys. And luckily, Lorenzo can't hear you guys, so you can't bust on him. And we're going to say whatever we want.
I can bust on them, though.
That's
right. Yeah,
right. Talk to me a little bit. You look nice, by the way.
Thank
you look
I'm
way
trying,
better than
you know?
Murph and Donald do
right, yeah,
back
they,
in
they
New
dress,
York.
They dress like trash back
right.
in the studio. So I had to step my game up and just take it to another level. But I'm down here with the NFLPA engagement, just kind of hanging out. Here with Jerry Mallon, somebody that we have a consultant with the Bills that helps guys with this PR presentation. And then really for my transition once I'm done playing the game.
And what are your plans? I mean, what would you – if you had your dream job after you finished,
dream
what are you looking at?
Dream job would be in the local market.
Besides an executive of a Fortune 500 company, you know.
Whatever city me and my wife decide to live in once post-career, to have like a local, you know, radio show, maybe 12 to 3 midday show, I can get off in time to go – pick up the kids, go still coach football, and then maybe do some stuff on the weekend with the team.
So basically you want to be John Murphy.
John Murphy, exactly. There you go.
Perfect. Talk to me a little bit more about player engagement. What's that mean? I mean, because, listen, you and me and the guys in the league, we all know what that is.
Right.
But people outside the league and people listening in Buffalo, the NFL has this huge arm called player engagement.
Right.
Tell them what the league does for those guys.
You know, player engagement just really helps guys fulfill and go into different areas that they have passion in outside of football. So whether it's finance, open up a business, broadcasting, doing franchises. They have a myriad of different things.
Right.
They go back. Real estate.
The franchises are big. I mean, guys will say, you know, because they know that's something they can kind of count on, and it's, you know, kind of a plug and play.
Plug and play, and it just gives guys a chance to see what they're going to do post career, because we all know the average career is 3 years. I've been lucky to play 13, but even when I'm done, I'm going to be 35. So what am I going to do for the next 20, 40 years of my life? I'm not going to sit at home and bug my wife.
You exactly what you see. I, same thing. I retired when I was 35, and I stepped right over into this side of the, I just finished my 20th year in broadcasting.
Wow.
And now, in fact, you know, like 7 years ago, I started to the point where I was been broadcasting more than I was as a player. You know,
and that's crazy. So, what was the hardest thing for that transition for you, as being a player now, being on the other side?
I think for me, just having enough confidence to find my own voice. You know, and I got in with a great CBS has been absolutely phenomenal for me. They were very patient with me because, you know, when you first start out, it's hard to find your voice. Do an analyst job because that's a job that everybody makes. Part of the job is making it look easy.
Yeah.
So when I see all those guys doing it, well, that sounds easy. I could do that.
Do it,
Well, it ain't that easy. And I stunk at it for a while. No, just for a while. Not all the time.
Right.
And
hey,
no matter what Twitter, no matter what Twitter says, I didn't stink at it forever.
Yeah.
But, you know, they let me find my voice. So I got in with a really good company, and I got a lot of – and nowadays, particularly for a guy like you coming out, there's so many outlets, many platforms you can take part in, the you know, podcasts – websites and broadcast networks, cable networks, regional sports networks. There's all kinds of outlets for you to be a part of, and you've learned obviously too when you start out while you're playing and get your runway set, and people and the industry get to know what kind of guy you are. They give you that path once you're done. They'll have some opportunities.
Right. So for players, do you have anything that you would recommend they do, whether they transition to broadcasting or to being a franchise owner, steps that may have made the process easier or more seamless for you?
For me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing that made it seamless for me and easier was you got to start while you're playing.
Okay.
And for me, for guys like us, I didn't really have to do it for money, you know. I didn't have to make a buck. So I worked for free.
Yeah.
Basically. Yep. I was willing to do it for free. I did it for 2 years for nothing.
Oh, wow.
And the second year I came back to say I'm going to ready to do it, they go, oh, you're serious.
Oh.
Yeah, so it took that long for him to say, oh, all right, so you really do want to do this. You're doing this for nothing. It wasn't just like a thing you're dabbling in.
Okay.
I had to do it for a while before I could even convince people in the industry that, okay, he is passionate about it.
Well, maybe I don't feel so bad now because Jay still hasn't paid me the last 2 years
I know.
On the show.
I got a bag of Skittles you can have, right?
I can get these for my boy Marshawn Lynch anytime. You know, I just got to go home, and he got Skittles everywhere for me.
This and $6 million will get you Marshawn Lynch on your team. Yeah. Talk to me about this week. Now, you got this game. You've played the Patriots twice for a couple of years. I mean, talk to me about why – I'll just ask you flat. Why are the Patriots so good all the time?
I mean, this is a well-coached football team. As simple as it is, right?
They're just ready for everything.
They don't make mistakes. They don't beat themselves. And if you make an adjustment or have a game plan that they weren't prepared for, they make in-game adjustments to combat that. And then normally one of their stars, whether it's Tom Brady, Amendola, Dante Hightower last year, steps up and makes a spectacular play to take them over the top.
Right. And you're exactly right. I mean, it's not so much that, your team this year was kind of that way. You guys jumped out of that 5-2 start because you didn't make any mistakes and you were getting those turnovers.
Exactly.
All of a sudden you're 5-2 and it's like you're a completely different vibe coming out of your locker room.
Yeah, and that's huge in any football game. You know, we always break the game down into different segments of it. The game within the game.
Situational football.
You know, so Sean is always stressing, you know, third down, 2 minute, red zone, winning coming or going into the halftime and then winning the possessions coming out of halftime.
Right.
Things that people don't normally think about that the Patriots do at a high level and that we're trying to become them as far as successful, being a perennial playoff team and then hopefully eventually win a championship is what we want to accomplish. And those are the things that you have to pay extra detail to win.
Now, you've been playing, so you don't really sit around. You'll study your next opponent during the season. You'll get to know guys around the league.
Right.
And you probably don't know Philly that much from that spec.
Right.
But you can look at them and say, you know what you're looking at.
Yeah, well, I got, obviously a couple of guys on their team.
Right.
Ronald Darby, Corey Graham, both former Buffalo Bills. Nigel Branham, who also played with the Buffalo Bills. So I got to meet him today over at the press conference. But what I did, I went out to Greg and our IT department and said, hey, Greg, do you mind if I get my iPad or so I can get the Exos? Because I didn't know anything about Philly at all. And so, actually coming out here and a couple of days ago, just been watching some film on them and see what they've been able to do well. And defensively, they just line up in single high. They don't disguise anything. They don't play man, cover three, and they just get after you. Linebackers are playing downhill. Michael Kendricks, Kyle Bear, playing very fast. They moved him from the middle to the outside now, more in the position that I played this season. And he's been very dynamic in coverage and just coming down hitting guys. The same thing with Nigel. You know, he's a free agent this year. Guys are saying, is he going to come back? And I see why after watching some film. And the guy is fast and plays very well. And those two guys have been having a good season, especially during the playoffs.
Yeah. So what do you and this kind of matchup, and you see the Patriots once in a while will run out and beat a team by double digits, beat them by 15, 20 points. But usually, particularly in games like this, it's like a five-point game.
It's close.
A one-possession game.
Right. Even we saw that last week versus Jacksonville. And they got down, but then they just – stayed
hung
the course.
In there, man.
Stay calm. We've been here before. We've been down worse, actually, and we won the game. So they just know how to stay in the moment. And they're not overly talented, so you can compete with them and play with them.
Sure.
But teams tend to break down in the third quarter, fourth quarter, in the two-minute situations where either Tom Brady takes advantage of it or they just make some great in-game adjustments like I think they did last week versus Jacksonville, was able to eventually stop the run and beat Jacksonville at their own game as far as field position. They were willing to run the ball, get stopped, punt the ball, back up Jacksonville, and make Jacksonville drive the field.
All right, we're here in Minneapolis with Lorenzo Alexander, Buffalo Bill linebacker. We're talking about the Patriots and the Eagles Super Bowl. And I got to ask you this, too. One of the things about the Bills this year, because there's a lot of unknowns with the new coaching staff and everybody, and they churned the roster even in the preseason. They continued even into the season.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of stuff that we just didn't know about. And we said this earlier on the show today. We're talking about, you know, the trading Ron Darby, Reggie Ragland, and some of these guys that are very, very talented players. And we made the point, I said this, the team wasn't really about acquiring talent, but they were trying to build a team. And that's kind of what you're alluding to about the Patriots. They got a team. You can compete with them physically.
Right.
They don't have a super – well, Gronkowski maybe.
Yeah, but you never walk off feeling like they physically just dominated.
Right. They don't beat you with their level of talent. They beat you with their level of discipline and their attention to detail and their coaching staff. And that's kind of the vibe coming out of Buffalo now. You guys are better as a team than you are as the total sum of your parts.
Right. And I think that was the biggest detail and the biggest change from 2 years ago to this year, just the attention to detail. The game within a game, really always revisiting our fundamentals, technique, things that are going to help you get through downs when things break down completely.
Right.
And those oftentimes are how you win or lose games. You know, it's not because he was better than me, but I had bad eyes on this play and he ran a double move, but I'm looking at the quarterback, deep ball, touchdown.
Right.
Or I thought it was cover three and we really in cover four, touchdown. So miscommunication.
Yeah.
So we really cleaned up a lot of that stuff this year. Attention to detail, communication, all the little things that people always kind of look past, especially when you have a lot of talent or you see talent when you see a guy.
I'm telling you, it's so crazy because, especially on the defensive side of the football, communication is always talked about. You got to communicate. And you make a great point. I thought it was a different coverage than you did.
Right.
And you think, well, golly, all you got to do is – well, the defense can't huddle up. And it sounds easy. Just tell the guy what the coverage is. You're standing on a football field, and you've got Tom Brady or Ben Roethlisberger or whoever snapping the huddle, and they're running out the line.
Right.
You're trying to get lined up and say, who I got?
Panic sets
in. And you got to – and the way a defense communicates isn't in a huddle, says, hey, I write 40, you know, Zen right, 352 smash. It's not like that. It's like –
Hey!
You're
yeah.
yelling across the field,
signals,
and you're signaling
like,
it, and
if
and you're
it?
Trying to you're trying to watch what you're doing over here, while the guy over there is trying to signal you, and you miss that.
Yeah, you can.
And
miss
it's hard to communicate when you stand in a stadium with 90,000 people screaming.
Right, and that's why the preparation week is so important. Watch a film together as linebackers and safeties. So when things happen to come out, even though I may not get all the we see it the same because we've talked about it. We've already seen it together. So we're just naturally on the same page. And that's where that chemistry comes along that people talk about. But oftentimes that comes over years, you know. But with free agency now, you got guys coming in and out. You don't always have that luxury. So we had to pay a little bit extra time. And, like, this year, every Saturday mornings, linebackers, safeties were getting together, watching film together.
Right.
Just say, oh, how do you see this? Or what are you going to do on this? Just in case I don't hear you, I already know because we've talked about it.
Yeah. What are you going to do the rest of the week?
Hang out, continue to do some more interviews, jump on some other shows. We got the PA party. I got the PA conference
later. Is that
later.
Tonight or is that
tonight.
Tonight, yeah.
And just some other things. Go to the BET Honors and just have a good time. My wife flies in tomorrow, so I'll get a chance to spend some time with her.
Yeah, all right. Lorenzo Alexander, Buffalo Bill linebacker. Thanks for stopping by with us,
always.
Man.
Yeah,
we'll send it back to Those guys aren't doing anything. Donald and Murph are not doing anything.
I can only imagine what they're doing.
Let's see if they're. Are you guys there? Actually, I think you are. Take it away.
Steve, we are here. I wanted to ask Lorenzo a question. I'm not sure if we.
Yeah, he can hear you.
Donald's going to ask you something.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Lorenzo a question. I just, you know, it's a nice color scheme he picked out. I don't know if he picked that out or if our buddy Jerry Medelon picked that out.
He wants to know if Jerry Medelon picked out your color scheme because it looks so nice. He doesn't trust that you could do that by yourself.
Well, actually, my wife picked it out. You know, she helped me out. I bought the shirt, and she put it together for me. So kudos to Manzanita.
I commented. He looks sharper than most of the people here. Me too. But
well, Jerry challenged me. He said, make sure you come looking fresh. If, you know, if your co-host or anybody else doesn't show up, shame on them.
That's right. Listen, guys, Listen, this is why you come to the Super Bowl right here. It's all the free stuff. I got 5 pounds. I don't know how I'm going to get it on the plane, but I got like 5 pounds of Skittles.
Was that bag of Skittles full when you got it? Was that
toss them off the side like beads?
No. They were handing it. It's like a third, but you can't hardly lift it. The darn thing. Skittles are heavy in mass form.
Steve, ask him if he went to those famous gifting suites yet that we talked about last week.
Oh, did you go? Do they have gifting suites where you go in and they got the suite because I've been a part of those.
Yeah.
You don't know why Pro Bowl's great. It's the free stuff.
Right. The gifted suites are awesome. I'll hit up the Nike one later. They have a couple other ones. But I got to wait for my wife. She doesn't get in tomorrow. So I'm hoping it's because that stuff goes fast. Listen, now.
Yeah. You got to show up early in the week. I went to a gifting suite one where they were fitting you for putters.
Yeah.
They were giving you watches. They were giving you jacket. I mean, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. We always have to bring an extra suitcase just for the stuff that we bring home.
I did that too. We used to go to the Pro Bowl.
Right.
You bring a suitcase folded, a little baguette folded up in your suitcase so you can pop that thing out and check it on the way home.
Right, or not. And sometimes I wouldn't even pack as much as I would just because you're going to get a ton.
Yeah, you wear all the gear that they give
you. All the gear, it's pretty cool, you know.
You guys should be here. You shouldn't be here. Steve, we're better off with you guys there.
Looks like you went to the Skittles gifting suite, though,
right,
Steve.
Yeah, you know what? I was just sitting here, and they came in, and they were trying to, you know, I dropped them. I said, yeah, I'll take it. They got three of them?
Oh, no. All right.
If it's free, give me three.
Thank you, Steve. We'll check back in with you. Thanks to Lorenzo, and great to have him on the air with us as well. Thanks, fellas, reporting from the Super Bowl in Minneapolis, Minnesota. This gifting suite thing, I am not – this is not a this is not something that I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
I know what they are. Never been invited.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Lie. When I played my first year, and I was talking to Lorenzo about this last week, my first year, the Super Bowl was in Dallas. This was the year the Packers beat the Steelers.
Okay.
And I go to the gifting suite. Now, obviously, this is my first year, so I didn't really know anything. And my agent was down there with me with a couple of other players from around the league. We're walking around. Danny Batten is his name? Yeah. So Danny was with me, another guy who played with the Colts at the time. He was with us. So we walk into the hotel where the gifting suite is, and they're like, yeah, all these gifting suites are in this hotel. So I'm like, all right, cool.
And we go upstairs. You have to be a player, NFLPA.
You have to be a player, yeah.
Okay.
So we go upstairs, and we come out of the elevator, and it's just hotel rooms with the door wide open, and it's just stuff everywhere, and they were giving out Xboxes, they were giving out clothes. I mean, it was so much stuff. It was like, yo, this right here is amazing. And so the second year I learned, all right, now I gotta take a suitcase like Lorenzo was saying with nothing in it so that I can get a bunch of stuff. And I remember, I mean, you see so many different players. You go into the Nike one, you'll see all of the players from around the league in there, guys just standing around talking. They're giving away book bags full of stuff, going to Under Armour, Adidas. I mean, it's amazing.
Because I think most of us agree that nobody needs more free stuff than NFL players. Guys who play in the NFL have it rough, and they need gifting suites just to just to carve out an existence.
I never understood it either, right? I mean, most of these guys have Nike deals or Under Armour deals worth whatever it is, $25,000 that you get for the year to go into the Nike outlet and just spend money, or go into NikeID.com or whatever the website is and just spend money. So then you still get to go to a Nike gifting suite, and they just give you stuff anyway. It's amazing. It's crazy.
America is a great country. It really is. The NFL's pretty good,
making this
too.
Stuff for 50 cents somewhere else, yeah. So they got to give it away somehow.
Have to give it away.
Yeah.
Roger Goodell says it's time to start over on the catch rule. Want to know from you what you think that entails. That's our Twitter poll. Let's check where that's going. Pretty obviously, most people think if you remove replay, you'll be all right with catch, no catch. But what do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. On Twitter, 75% of you say that possession and 2 feet down is the key. Simplify it that way. Just say, get possession, get 2 feet down. 12% say, don't use replay anymore on catch, no catch. I'm down with that. 9% have something else in mind. 2% say, more replay. More technology when it comes to catch, no catch. Let us know what you think. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Can you and I, from our standpoint, Donald, just cross off more replay? We agree on that, right?
Yeah.
You don't need more replay. You don't need more technology to sort out the what constitutes a catch. The commissioner said he wants to simplify it. He wants to scale back a little bit. You don't need more technology.
What happened in the Steelers game? I remember, was he falling to the ground? The ball had crossed the plane, but because he was falling to the ground and it moved a little bit, they called it no catch.
They
right?
said he did not complete the process.
Yeah, so take all of that stuff out.
Didn't survive the ground.
Right. Like, take all of that didn't survive the ground stuff. Unless the ball clearly comes out. The issue is because it's and on any other play, as soon as the ball crosses the plane, it's a touchdown. So now because he's actually going to the ground, it's different. You have too many different – it's too much gray area in there.
Yeah,
and this is
absolutely.
What I'm saying. Just take all of that gray area out. Take so much of the replay out. Eliminate all that stuff. Let the refs make the call. And that's it. And we have to live with whatever the ref – and the ref has to live with whatever his call is.
A lot of the new terminology, survive the crown, complete the process of the catch, make a football move, all of that has been a result of the replay era. Nobody talked about this stuff before instant replay. Another argument, from my mind, for eliminating the use of replay entirely and just scaling it back. And people say, oh, that'll never happen. Why? Right. Why could it never happen? Why can we not go back to the way it was before replay? Six, seven officials on the field, empowered with calling what they see. They make the call. We move on. You get over it. Maybe the call's right. Maybe the call's wrong. Because you don't get them all right with the use of replay. Why do people think it's impossible to eliminate instant replay in the NFL? What do you think fewer people will watch?
No.
I don't either.
No.
Well, you think people are going to say, well, if they use replay, they would have seen that was wrong. Yeah?
Yeah.
They would have. And so what? If they use replay now, they still get it wrong. And we sit here and agonize because, oh, they even looked at it on replay and they got it wrong. Oh, the Kelvin Benjamin's catch. Oh, they looked at it on replay and said no touchdown. That drives me crazy.
Yes.
I don't think they would. Yeah. Replay doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't. Eliminate it. Go back to the way it was. Why do people consider that impossible? I don't understand that.
I agree with you. Just eliminate it and let the refs make the call, man. You have too many of these calls that are coming down too close, and then you got to go to replay. That takes forever on the replay. You're under the hood, especially the really, really close ones. You're under the hood for another 5-10 minutes, which is like, come on, man. Can we just make the call so we can move on to the next play? And then you come back and you still get it wrong? And you're like, dude, we just took all of that time. What were you talking about? Were you guys talking about, let's go have a beer after this, under the hood? You want to go get a beer after this? Yeah. What are we doing right now?
They don't even do the call now in stadium. It's at the centralized replay review in New York.
It's in New York, so it's crazy, man. Just let the refs make the calls on the field, and if they make the wrong call, and everybody's still going to be upset anyway with replay, without replay. So you might as well just let the refs do their job and make the calls.
You know, and people will say, "Well, that's unrealistic." Now you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. I think you should try. I really think you should try to put this toothpaste back in that tube and eliminate replay. And that's all our Twitter topic today has allowed me to do is to go off to continue my campaign, which will not stop, which will continue my campaign to eliminate the use of instant replay. Let's hear from you. The phone line's open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The commissioner says, time to start over again on the catch rule. Where would you start? Where would you begin? We're going to head back to Steve Tasker at the Super Bowl City in a moment or two, get his take on what's happened so far there today, maybe get another guest or two and talk about tomorrow's show. So come on back for that. Yes, sir?
I got somebody just sent the text in to me, one of my buddies. He said, eliminate replay from the games, but use it to grade the refs after the games.
I'm all for that. Yeah. Love it.
We could talk about
love
that some more.
Like that. Yeah. Here's how they grade. Here's what should have happened here. What happened to you? Why did you make the call? But I like that. That's genius. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Hey, here's a show you don't want to miss coming up on coming up this weekend. Playoff Caliber, End of the Drought, presented by Connors and Ferris. It's a television show that chronicles the New Year's Eve segment where the Bills beat the Dolphins and watched Cincinnati win and ended the 17-season playoff drought. It is tomorrow, starts tomorrow, first airing tomorrow, 7 p.m. on Channel 7 here in Buffalo, and then Saturday, 11:30 p.m. on Channel 7. Playoff Caliber, End of the Drought, this weekend, Friday night, Saturday night, presented by Connors and Ferris. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive, John Murphy and Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio, and take a few phone calls on this catch-no-catch thing and what has to be changed on that and the role of replay. We'll start with Mark in Lancaster. Mark, go ahead. You're on the air. Well, hang on, Mark. Can't get to you yet. Stand by, stand by, stand by. And now Mark in Lancaster. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, sorry. Listen, I can't disagree with you more. I think that technology, there has to be a place for technology in the game. And the reason I say that is you come in, there's situations where games can be decided. The outcomes of games are decided on referees' mistakes, and people go crazy for that. And how often are you hearing complaints of how bad the officiating is in the NFL? And I mean, that's a constant year in and year out. And when you get a game that's decided, or even a situation where a team could make the playoffs or not make the playoffs because of a bad call, officiated wise, and it's critical. That's why technology is so important, I think.
Would you rather – so you're telling me you're okay with the game being decided on a mistake made by a replay official?
I'll tell you this. I think more often than not, the replay officials are getting it correct. I think if you look at the percentage of that, I think it's a much higher percentage that they're getting that call correct rather than not in a situation like that. And I think that's kind of a bad argument. Now – you know, I would not be okay if a play where a player, you know, makes a catch in the end zone and it's ruled out of bounds, and we've got to live with it. But yet, it's a correct catch, and that elevates that team to the playoffs. You know, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. I'd be furious about something like that.
So, Mark, what it sounds like you're saying is keep the replay technology, but change the rules, possibly.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I'm saying you can dumb it down to, you know, call a catch, you know, start with maybe control the ball. Dumb down the rules, but you keep the technology and use it so that, you know, there's a cut and dry case where a play is made and it's an incorrect call by the officials. I think you've got to use technology to make that correct call because it's going to decide the outcome of games.
I hear your argument, Mark, and I respect your opinion, but I would submit that the use of replay has pushed us into this corner where there are new standards that have to be met, which include completing the process of a catch, surviving the ground. Does the ball move? Did he make a football move? They've gone through, they've churned through a number of these different standards, different thresholds that have to be met to call a catch or not, all because of replay. I'm saying you really want to simplify it, get rid of replay. I trust the guys on the field to get it right a large percentage of the time, and we can argue all day about what percentage it would be replay, non-replay, but I just think the replay has generated this whole new set of standards for what constitutes a catch, and it's made the game worse, I think, less watchable, I believe. Okay.
Maybe just over-analysis.
Yeah.
Over-analysis of the replay.
Yeah.
Is what's making the mistake. Yeah, is causing the mistakes.
That's what I think, yep. Thanks, Mark. Good point.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Let's go to Bob calling from Wheatfield. Hello, Bob. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph and Don. You know, I've been watching for 40 years. Not to say that I'm the oldest guy watching, but it just dismays me that we have this issue. I agree with you, Murph. Let's get rid of it. Let's let the guys call it on the field, and let's evaluate the referees at the end of the season, or even periodically, and saying, you guys got to get it right, because most of the time, as far as I'm concerned, they're wrong. And then the official, you know, throw the flag out and get official review because somebody up in some booth told the coach. That is an instant playing of the game. It's playing of a game in retrospect. And I can do a lot of things in retrospect. I'd rather play the game on the field.
I think that's a good point, Bob.
I'll take it a step further, and we've talked about this in the past in terms of the refs. For me, make refs full time. And I know you're going to have people that say, well, refs have other things. They have other jobs and all of that stuff. Well, if you have another full-time job, go do your other full-time job.
Yeah.
You need to be fully vested in the NFL. If you're going to work in the NFL, like NFL head coaches, GMs, players, everybody on the field that has anything of significance to do with this game is full-time except for the refs. You need to make them full-time. And then you can evaluate them on a certain scale or whatever the case may be. Like my buddy who sent me the message says, use the replay for evaluations after the game.
Just like they do for players.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, use the video to say you missed this block. You missed that play. Do it to officials.
Right.
You missed that call. You weren't in the right position. I'm all right
and
with
that. And if they're full-time, and we know the refs go through their whole training camp and all of that stuff too. But now if you got full-time officials, this is your 24 hours a day. This is your job.
Yeah.
All right? So you go and you train, and you look closely at these plays and all of that stuff in the offseason. You have to train just like the players do to get ready for the seasons. And the NFL makes enough money to pay these refs enough money for them to be full-time.
Here is Pat in North Tonawanda. Hello, Pat. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hello, John. Yeah, I think a bunch of good points have been brought up. Donald, I really like that last one. Making refs full time. I've been a big proponent of that for many years. But until that time, I don't know how the NFL mucked it up so bad. What happened to the point of, you know, overwhelming evidence? In certain cases, there's not overwhelming evidence,
right.
And they go up to the replay booth and they just boot it.
The initial standard was they had to have indisputable visual evidence. I think they've gone a long way from that standard. I really do. I think you make a good point about that. Here is Joe calling in his car, driving in his car. Hello, Joe.
Hi, guys. My idea was either get rid of replay altogether and have more officials on the sidelines for more eyes to check out the plays, or when the refs do go to the replay booth, let them see it at full speed like they did on the field, and don't slow it down frame by frame so they can see little minute microseconds where the ball just moved to call it an incomplete pass. That's my idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what that might lead to, Joe, if they did that, would be, and again, even if you want to keep it centralized review in New York City with the crew there, then they would get a look at the play exactly the same way, the same speed that the official on the field did.
Right.
And that would allow them to say, well, I'm reluctant to turn this over. I'm looking at this in real time, or at least, you know, at the same time the official did, and I see what he saw. I see why he called it that way. I'm not, you know, in other words, it would raise the bar. It'd have to be overwhelming, indisputable visual evidence that the guy missed the call.
Right. I think that.
Yeah,
I like that.
That's a step in the right direction. I like that. Thank you. Here is David calling from Brockport. Hello, David. Welcome.
Hi, John and Donald. I say the 2 foot down rule. But think about our playoff games. Tennessee, too bad we didn't have replay then.
Well, they did.
Vanderbilt, but
they did.
God, we didn't during the comeback game because Don Beebe was most likely out.
they did have replay in home run throwback. You know, he went to the under the hood and looked at it, Phil Luckett. And, yeah, we're not talking about, you know, what's best for the Buffalo Bills here. We're not talking about which calls would have gone Buffalo's way or not.
Right.
I'm not. Are you?
No, I watch the Bills and I study them closely, but we all watch games all over the league. I would hate for this Sunday in the Super Bowl for a call to go one way or the other, because especially if the call is wrong after we've looked at it. And we all know in the Super Bowl, I mean, there are like 10 times more cameras in the Super Bowl than a regular season game.
Yeah.
So they're going to have so many angles, and you're going to look at it from all of these different angles. You're going to have one camera, and it's going to rotate the camera down to the other side.
Little cameras,
it's going
to be like, pylons.
Hey, what? Right. It's going to be like, what is going on here? For me, I like what the one caller said there was, and if you want to go under the hood, watch it real time.
Yeah.
I'd like for them to make the rest full time, evaluate them using replay after the game. Just take it out of the hands of so many frame by frame that we're looking at during the course of a game.
One more call on this. We'll go to Zeth in Gowanda. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Yes, I was just calling. I agree with what you're saying. I think the refs get paid too much money not to have to go and record
and go have to watch a recording about it. I mean, they get paid millions to make a decision. So I think on-field the refereeing should be, I think it should go back to that instead of all these replays and everything. Because a catch in real life, I mean, if you're playing catch outside and you got to catch the ball and it barely nicks the ground when you're on the ground going to catch it, it's still a catch, though. Like,
sure.
Watching it like live, I think, is better than going to replay it.
I agree. Yeah. Thanks.
You know what this all boils down to, Murph?
I tell you what I'm hearing. I'm hearing people are starting to see things my way. Well, my anti-replay crusade has taken a little step forward today. That's the way I feel.
What this really boils down to is your buddy, Roger Goodell, from this area. You need to go ahead, give him a call, and let him know that you're anti-replay and we need to change this thing. And here's my ideas. And you could lay out an entire email, an outline of different ideas. You can break it down. I've seen you do these emails. I think you do a good job.
If I get a chance to talk to the commissioner in a non-confrontational way, and I like the commissioner, I would say, hey, good job. It is time to start over on the catch rule, and here's what I think. Steve Tasker joins us now from the Super Bowl 52 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Steve, great work out there today. We kind of got hijacked by our replay discussion and the commissioner's comments yesterday reviewing what constitutes a catch. I think it's a step in the right direction. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's good that they're going to blow that up and look at it again. I think I like a number of things. We all have our own opinion, and I've told you this before on the show. They can write the catch rule however you want to write it, and there's always going to be 100 times during a regular NFL season where you're going to bring that rule into question, no matter how you write it. And if you've got it where 2 feet, if both feet touch down, you got control of it, you're going to have 100 times where that you get 2 feet down, have control of it, and the ball's going to pop loose, and you're going to have fumbles all over the place instead of incomplete passes. And, you know, you're going to open another can of worms. So the further down the road we get, I like one of the things, and I've heard other people say this, having the replay official or any review of the play, have it go at real time. Let's see it at real time and see what it looks like to the naked eye. Because if you go down by frame, then you're going to start splitting hairs,
yeah.
And you're going to go down a road that takes you into this controversial place where it's going to be, you're going to get one frame of a replay that's going to, you know, be the difference between playoffs or non-playoffs. And I agree with it. Just do the replay at fast actions at the best angle or the number of best angles, and if you have something to cross-reference, look at a couple of different angles and figure out what happened and go from there at real-time action, because that's the way we see it. And I think the crux of it is, Murph, Don, if the fans are satisfied with it, that's what it should be. Forget about how hard it is for the officials. Forget about what it costs. Forget about, you know, how difficult it is for, you know, the coaches to see or whatever. If the fans are satisfied with the protocol and the way the catch rule is, that's the one you go with. I think we're too far down the road of replay to go back, but I don't think there's any question you can tinker with the catch rule, make it simple, and just have the replays go at full speed. And if it looks like a catch, call it a catch.
The worst case scenario for the league, for me, for many of us, Steve, is some sort of replay catch, no catch controversy coming up in Sunday's game.
Yeah.
Anybody want to rule that out?
Agree.
I wouldn't. It could happen.
I agree. Now you go back to there's a couple of plays, and I disagree with some of what the callers say, where they say even the replay official kind of messes it up. There was maybe two, maybe three instances all year where maybe it was controversial after the fact, but for the most part, they get 99.9% of those calls right in replay. They don't mess it up. The problem is when you see a guy catch it, like the guy in Pittsburgh when Jesse James reached over in the Pittsburgh game against New England. He catches it, and what looks to everybody in the naked eye, takes a couple of steps, sticks the ball over the end zone, and goes down with it. That's a touchdown. And because of the way they have to write the rule, it's not a catch. And that changes the season for a lot of people. So I think you got to get the rule the way you want to get it. Let the fans be happy with the protocol. And look at the replays in real time. Because if it looks like a catch in the backyard playing against your brothers where it's really important, it's certainly good enough for the NFL.
Steve, like you said, it changed the season for many people. I mean, it changed probably the fact that the Patriots would have been the second seed, the Steelers would have been the first seed, and the Super Bowl would have went through Pittsburgh instead of New England. But, Steve, what's going on around you right now? Sounds like there's like some competition or something like that.
I have no idea what's going on around me. There's so much going on around me that we have no clue about. And, you know, you can't even – I can't even tell you. There's like 50 people standing with Jay Harris behind the camera. We've got CBS Radio over here. And then we got somebody yelling over here. We got all the stuff behind me that you can see that's going on, and fans everywhere just kind of watching what's going on. Today's the day when a lot of superstars around the NFL, former guys, a lot of Gold Jacket Hall of Famers are walking around. The place is buzzing. And I know a lot of people in Buffalo have been to this through all those early 90 years. All the older crowd, you know, they're my age or a little older, have been through this. And I told you guys off the air that when Buffalo plays in another Super Bowl, I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun for the Bills fans to be a part of it. It's really a special event. There's nothing like it in the whole wide world of sports. And it's fun to be here. It really is.
It's likely to be even more crowded tomorrow, I would think. And you've got a pretty busy lineup of people you're going to talk to tomorrow, huh?
Yeah, in fact, we got Daniel Jeremiah, the NFL Network draft specialist, is going to drop by and talk to us. We've got James Lofton, the Hall of Fame Buffalo Bill and wide receiver, is going to come by and talk to us. Also, it's interesting because James Lofton is one of the Hall of Fame voters. There are two guys in the Hall of Fame voting. It's James Lofton and Dan Fouts that are voters for the Hall of Fame. Kevin Harlan, who is going to do the play-by-play call for the national radio broadcast of Super Bowl 52, is going to stop by and chit-chat with us. And we just found out a minute ago that Doug Flutie is going to stop by. We're going to talk to Doug Flutie, the former Bills quarterback, and the guy who, great broadcaster now, has been doing it for a lot of years. Heisman Trophy winner, is going to stop by and talk to us as well. So once again, tomorrow we're going to be neck deep in cool people to talk to, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Do you have another day left in you there, Steve? I know you guys have been killing it.
Well, it's in some ways it's kind of hard to pull off, but in a lot of ways it's the perfect place to do it as well. And Jay Harris has been doing a fantastic job, and I say that because I'm gonna ask him for a favor later. But no, it's been fun. It's been really good. The city has opened up. They've got all, you know how it is. There's thousands of Minneapolis, Minnesota volunteers that are doing this. They all have smiles on their faces, and this Radio Row has been something special. I mean, they're all different. Every city is different. Every Super Bowl is different, and this one is. I think they're pulling it off in a really smart way. They've done a nice job.
Plus, you have Skittles, unlimited supply of Skittles to keep you going.
That is a huge bonus. It's been unbelievable. Like, I'm going to make a lot of new friends on my way out of this place, I know.
Steve, thanks. We will check in with you tomorrow. Thank you very much.
All right, guys.
I can't imagine what favor he has to ask our producer.
I can't imagine either. I mean, you're talking about Steve Tasker, who knows so many people down there, media, former players, whatever the case is. Hey, Jay, I need a favor.
What could that be? Oh, man, we got to find out. We'll find out off the air what that's all about. We're going to come back in a moment, kind of recap the Twitter poll, recap the day, talk a little bit more with you. It is the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. A lot of great guests today. Steve Tasker talked to all of them, including Greg Cosell, the analyst and the producer of ESPN's NFL matchup. Greg Cosell has some thoughts about how this year's version of the Super Bowl Patriots is different than recent iterations of that team.
Well, I think this edition of the Patriots offense has been a little more intermediate and vertical based in the passing game. They throw the ball down the field more than we're used to seeing them. But I think you made a great point. You obviously know about the tempo offense from your days as a player, but I think you're really going to see that in this game, Steve, because I think the strength of the Eagles' defense is their D-line rotation. They play seven or eight guys, and they like to rotate that throughout the game. It keeps everybody fresh. They really don't want anybody having to play 65 or 70 snaps a game. And that selective use of no-huddle tempo, I think, is absolutely going to be critical for the Patriots.
Greg Cosell from NFL Matchup on ESPN. Steve down in Minnesota talked to Taquio Spikes, former Bills and Eagles linebacker. And Taquio has his take on this matchup between the Patriots and the Eagles on Sunday.
At NFC Championship game, Doug Peterson, he did a nice job of orchestrating tendency breakers. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of plays. I saw a lot of things that he usually do in certain down and distances.
He gave it to Nick Foles and said, you know what, I'm going to give you the keys to the Ferrari today.
Right.
They don't know that. They think I'm going to give you the keys to the Camry.
Right.
And he went out and he put that thing, he went from first to sixth gear immediately.
Right.
And I think that's going to be the difference in this game.
Dekeel Spikes on the difference in the game. A lot more analysis of the game and Donald and my selections for the game coming up on tomorrow's show. Our Twitter poll, Roger Goodell says it's time to start over on the catch, no catch rule. Where do you start? Most of you overwhelmingly say make it simple, possession plus 2 feet down. 12% say don't use replay at all when it comes to catches. 9% have something else in mind, and 2% say use replay more often on catches. So most people say keep it simple, 2 feet down. I love this tweet. Mike tweeted in on replay. Go to Supreme Court on the replay. 9 people all get 20 seconds to watch and make their decision. Majority wins. All reviews done this way. Perfect. U.S. Supreme Court. They don't have anything better to do.
Right, exactly.
Go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, you heard Steve talk about the lineup that he's got planned for you for tomorrow on the show. Some great guests, including Kevin Harlan and James Lofton, the former Buffalo Bills wide receiver. Donald and I will be babysitting the show here tomorrow.
We will.
Well, Steve does all the heavy lifting.
I guess holding down the fort.
Yeah,
something
holding
like
down
that.
Something here. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants today, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Colton, Nick Thomas Hollander, our producer Jay Harris. Thanks to Steve Tasker for all of his work out of Minnesota at the Super Bowl. One more day out there for him tomorrow. Donald and I are back tomorrow at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We'll be at One Bills Drive and at the Super Bowl tomorrow here on Buffalo Bills Radio.